Veronica, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder here for an entire week of entertainment and education. We're thrilled that you're here.
Education?
Yeah. Somebody's going to learn something. I don't know who,
probably
I don't
me.
Know when, but somebody at some point will learn something. You're incredibly dressed today. You look very nice. What's going on? Something's wrong.
I haven't done laundry.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You're dressed to the nines, as the kids like to say.
Not really. I'm kind of cash. I got the flip-flops on and just a skort.
Yeah. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. It's the skort that makes the difference.
Yep.
I think it is the skort that makes the difference.
I'm going to put that on my bumper sticker.
We want to welcome back Kevin, our producer, who had an entire weekend of just debauchery and crazy times for his bachelor party.
I don't believe so. Do you follow him on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter?
Yeah, all of the above.
Because I saw some action going on, and not the action you're thinking for a bachelor party, like flowing water, rivers.
I follow Kevin on Groupon. Isn't that strange? I don't know why, but that's the mode
I've chosen. Are you getting a good deal?
Yeah. Yeah. Six of us can follow him for the price of one from now until Wednesday. Kevin, it was fun.
We had a great time. It was amazing.
It started out very badly, you know.
I didn't even tell you this one because I hadn't had a chance to. But so
should we start at the beginning?
Sure.
So the listeners can get caught up to date?
So we were going, our plans were to go into Nederland. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But
the Netherlands. It's pronounced the Netherlands.
No, not the Netherlands. But we're going to be in Colorado just to do some hiking and have a good old time and meet up with some friends. Got word on Monday last week that the town of Nederland was on fire and they were evacuating it. The house we had rented had fire damage already, so luckily my best friend Teddy was able to like think on his feet and get us another place.
Because this was 3 days before you were going to leave.
yeah, literally. So we got extremely lucky. Teddy's a teacher, so he's got summers off, so luckily he was able to, you know, work all day. He said he spent like 7 hours trying to find a new spot. So,
but he did, and it was beautiful.
Beautiful.
The house
actually got lucky. It was a nicer house, and it was cheaper somehow. But,
ding.
Yeah. And then I feel like there was one other thing that went wrong.
Well, your brother was in a little bit of a problem.
So my brother and my friend Ed were going to drive out. I think it's like a 15-hour drive. So they had left at like 3 in the morning on Thursday. I got a call at 4 in the morning on Thursday. They hit a deer and totaled his car.
Oh, my God.
And so Ed was not able to come. My brother flew out on Friday.
They were okay, though.
Everybody was okay.
The car that was messed up.
But Ed said the damage was so bad, he said there was a bone sticking out of the hood of his car.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, totaled car.
The wedding's still on, though?
Yeah, everything's good after that. Once we got out there, everything was amazing. We had a great time. But, yeah, we had a couple of bad things happen.
Top that. It's impossible.
I can't.
It's impossible. All in just a couple of days. Did you know Kevin had a brother?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
A redheaded brother, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Ed said is that why you never talk about him?
Yeah, and I keep calling you Ed today. I'm sorry, Bill, and I didn't even see Ed, but yeah, Bill told me he had never heard me talk about him.
You don't listen.
No, I've never heard Kevin. I've known Kevin since he was three. I've never, ever heard him mention the fact that he has a brother, ever. Because he's telling a story about his brother, and I go, wait a minute.
You have a sister,
my file.
Too.
I
uncle.
Knew that.
Yep.
I knew all that.
A mom and a dad that are younger than us.
Yep, there's that.
See, that's where the block comes on. You hear that, you don't hear anything else.
Maybe that's what it is.
But yeah, because you always make fun of redheads, and I'm like, wait, I have one. Kevin has a redheaded brother. Kim Gordon has two redheaded sons.
I don't always. I'm select about
it. Yeah, I guess you're
some
right.
Some, like Ronald McDonald, I love. And the girl from Mad Men.
And Richie Cunningham and Ralph.
Right. Speaking of Richie Cunningham, how about Scott Baio?
What?
He's going to speak at the convention.
Why?
Here's why, Wendy. A couple of weeks ago, I said, who would you trust to endorse a candidate? And then in the back of my head, I go, the only person I would really trust is Chachi Arcola. No matter who else on the planet told me you got to vote for Hillary Clinton or you got to vote for Donald Trump, I'd go, what do you know? You're only a senator. But if Chachi Arcola is behind one of the candidates, I say to myself, that guy's got to be good.
And Chachi had like a little rant and rave going before about America and how Trump is great and
we're stupid. Wah. We used to say that all the time. And then we'd watch it and I go, I guess people in the 50s, I guess, said wah, wah, wah.
$10 says he says it during the convention.
He opens with wah, wah, wah.
I'll do a $10 bet with you. This is the highest bet
ever. You think he'll say wah, wah, wah?
Yes, because I know that the...
that bet. I thought about it. I say he will not say wah, wah, wah. You say he will say wah, wah, wah.
If he doesn't, I will be disappointed.
All right.
But see, that's what this is, just a joke. It's like, you know, TV stars... And there's no A-list because no one wants to be involved, so you go to the F-list.
Well, Trump for a while was going to guys like, even our own Mike Ditka was on that list of, you know, we'll have him speak, Ditka'll speak, he'll rile people up with his coach rhetoric. But now he's down to, I mean,
gang.
With all due respect,
wah, wah, wah.
The guy from Charles in Charge is going to convince people, although the phrase in charge is there in the title, so what do I know? How about the mess? I love this. And I don't know, I'm going to preface this by saying this is all hearsay. We don't know 100% that this is true, but apparently there's rumors out that at midnight on the night before Trump was going to announce that it's Mike Pence as his running mate, he's calling everybody. He's just calling everybody he can find to say, how do we get out of this? I don't want this guy to be my vice president. What do we do to change this?
How? I mean, he chose him.
He
was suggested.
He was in on the process, but I think we learned with John McCain, who didn't want Sarah Palin to be his running mate.
His downfall.
Yeah,
totally his downfall.
I would agree with you there. One of the biggest detractions probably from him was the fact
attractions?
That she... Detractions.
Okay. Well, she was kind of an attraction.
But then, did you see them on 60 Minutes? Did you hear or see any of them on 60 Minutes?
No.
Trump was uncomfortable. Like, any time they talked about anything that had to do with the two of them, Trump made it known that he could do he's fine without Mike. I mean, he didn't pull any punches. It's like, I don't even know if I need a vote. He's here. It was so awkward.
But I know McCain, I mean, they're given who they're given, kind of.
There is an element to that, yeah.
But, and then all this stuff came out, how Mike Pence was taking money from when he was... Was it governor or representative? He was taking money from his account to pay for his mortgage.
Right.
And then that's not good.
But Trump loves guys who move money around.
I guess.
He's a big fan of that kind of thing. I also like the fact that they disagree on so many things. Like, I don't know if you've heard the audio of Mike Pence just blasting Trump. Now, this is several months ago, about his idea for the wall and everything like that. So... I don't know. Is this his best choice? I'm going
to
watch. Are you watching the convention?
I almost can't wait.
He's got six family members, not one, not two, but six family members speaking at this thing, and Chachi.
Well, that's why I'm in. I wasn't going to watch it.
To see if you win the $10
bet.
Yeah,
it's a $10 bet that somewhere.
When will he say, just at some point, like if he's getting good response, does he just pull out the wah, wah, wah? Wah.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I know. I'll just put the $10 in my drawer, but I mean, it would be funny.
Will Al Del Vecchio bring him up on stage from Arnold's?
He's passed away, hasn't
he?
Oh,
is he gone? Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so, because we had no encore dinners after that.
Arnold is gone. I didn't know if Al's gone, too. That's sad. I hope that's not the case.
Well, if he isn't, he will be now.
I hope that's
not the case.
I know. The kiss of death. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got a lot on today's show. If you want to jump in, we welcome you at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. You got to see a legend perform over the weekend, didn't you?
Fantastic concert put out by Brian Wilson at Pitchfork.
Of the Beach Boys, formerly.
I don't even think you have to say that.
I know, but you know how anytime Paul McCartney's name is in the news, they always go, former Beatle Paul McCartney, for people who go, Paul McCartney. Oh, yeah. I know who that is.
You're taught that in news writing, and it's really frustrating.
I know.
Former Beatle, yeah, what, have you been living under the rock?
Yeah.
The rock.
Not the actor.
Okay, thank you. Brian Wilson played... First of all, I've never been to Pitchfork before. It was really cool, but I don't like a lot of people gathered at once.
Oh, is that right?
It's just...
Because why? What happened? Did somebody say or do something?
No, it's just a lot of people.
Yeah?
They had a couple of craft tents, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Michael spent like $50 buying albums. I said, did we come here to see a concert? But no, Reckless Records is there, so let's buy a Frank Zappa record.
Hard to say no to that.
I guess. But Brian Wilson... went on stage exactly at 7:20. The way Pitchfork is set up is there were two main stages.
Right.
And there was a Swedish band playing as we walked up. I was looking for Nicholas Jalmerson. I thought he'd be in the crowd.
In his jersey.
Yeah.
Just stomping his stick on the ground. Now this is music.
And I don't know the name of that band. I'm sorry. We didn't go to see them. And as soon as they finished... Next stage, where people were gathered, 7:20 on the button, Brian Wilson starts.
I like a punctual Brian Wilson.
It was awesome. And Al Jardine was there.
of the Beach Boys also.
Formerly of the Beach Boys.
That was interesting.
That was a surprise.
Yeah, I think it is.
Mike Love is hated by Beach Boys fans all over the place. Yeah. He was not on the premises at all.
No surprise there.
No, but Al Jardine kind of surprised me.
Did Dennis DeYoung get back with them or not?
No.
He did not?
Formerly of Styx?
Yeah.
No.
I can't keep track.
And Al Jardine's son was there. And if I'm not mistaken, I want to say Brian Wilson's son was there,
if that's possible,
if he has a son. And John Cusack got up on stage and sang a little something.
What?
Yeah.
That's an interesting move.
He was on the side stage with, I think, a bunch of Cubs. I didn't recognize them because I don't really know any Cubs players, really.
Yeah.
But they all had Cubs hats on and hot girls with them.
Yeah, that's the Cubs. That's your Cubs. That's your Chicago Cubs.
Yes, that is.
The spoils of war.
And so Cusack came out for the first song. He did, Brian Wilson did the whole album of Pet Sounds.
In order.
In order. And it was funny because it was like, here, Al Jardine says, here's where we flip the record. So we're going to need some time. It was very funny.
That is funny.
And then afterwards, hit Central, Surfing USA, Help Me Rhonda, Run Around Sue, everything.
How, all right, it's a two-part question. How does Brian Wilson sound? And was he there?
For moments, he was there.
He wasn't always there.
I saw Johnny Mars, a brother in sound from WXRT, and he said he's seen Brian a bunch of times, and it's just like all of a sudden Brian's at the keyboard singing, and he just disappears.
He fades away, doesn't he?
He just will stop singing, and the rest of the band kind of picks it up. He was great. He sounded a little slow, like he's had a lot of brain issues.
I know. He's lived a lot of life, too.
Yes. Drugs, breakdown, a lot of stuff. But all in all, it was a legend. It was really cool to be there. My son Michael's 17. He's wearing a shirt I got for him on Etsy that says, Help Me, Rhonda.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian Wilson wore this particular baseball shirt, you know, with the baseball arms.
Mm-hmm.
A promo shot for one of his records. So Michael's like, I have to have this shirt. Got it for his birthday. And it was pretty great. We had maybe some 20-somethings next to us who knew every word to every song.
Oh, I like that. That's
good. We had some people my age around. And as soon as they did Help Me, Rhonda, everybody turned around, pointed at Michael, and high-fived him because he had the Help Me Rhonda shirt on. It was a really beautiful crowd moment.
Very, very nice.
And then Sufjan Stevens started, and that's...
some sad music to end the evening.
He's
a little
good.
Melancholy.
It's, yeah, not my cup of tea, really.
Yeah.
So,
I know.
You know, we were walking out and asked one of the girls at the gate, hey, do you know where they're selling the Brian Wilson tour t-shirts? And she looked at me and she goes, oh, somewhere in the park. And I looked at her and I said, really? Do you think somewhere in the park?
Somewhere in the park?
Thank you for your help. And she goes, well, I don't go in the park. And thankfully, there was another guy who was really nice right next to her who said, there are two locations. There's one in the corner. I'm like, in the park. Thank you for your help.
It's a little vague, right? You wanted a little bit more specific of a location.
So we trudged through the Sufjan Stevens crowd to go where we thought the t-shirts were, and they had packed them all up.
Oh.
It's like, you know, done at 10 o'clock.
Wow.
Everybody out.
That's very fast. But now that it's all said and done, don't you feel good? I don't know if you have a bucket list of musicians that are legends, but you saw, seriously, one of the legends of music, so that's got to feel good.
It does
it?
Feel good, and Michael's so into music. I took him to see Bob Dylan, which he loved, and now Brian Wilson, and as we're walking out, he goes, I just have to see Sir Paul, formerly of the Beatles. That's all I have to see, and then my life can be complete.
That's a tough one sometimes. But
and what about Mick? He's got to see Mick.
Yeah, you should see him, too.
And his 29-year-old girlfriend, who just had a baby.
Right.
72.
No, is going to have a baby. I don't think she's had it yet. And he's not seen Alvin and the Chipmunks yet. You want to see them?
Brian Wilson looked great. He
looked so lifelike.
He did for moments. It's really a sad tale of woe.
It is. It really is. It's one of those stories about, it's the trappings of, he fell into the trappings of show business.
He did.
It fell hard.
Yeah.
You know,
but it was really, it was really exciting to go.
I bet.
And
I can imagine.
And we picked up some wow bows.
Oh, you did? Well,
always
that's a
fun
full
to
day.
Get a wow bow.
That's a full day. All right, we'll take a quick break. Veronica Carter has the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to a full work week. I think we're both here all week.
Yeah, that's the plan, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, anything could happen.
Yeah, I have to ask you something because you have experienced something before me.
All right. You'll know you're in love because you'll get this weird tingly feeling, Wendy. You can't explain it.
I'm already married.
Oh, all right.
So I don't want new tinglings. All right? I'd like to keep it where it is.
All right. What is it then?
Keep the tinglings at home. That's
all
what
right.
I like to
That's
say.
That's fair.
But now you had some girls go away to college.
Yes.
And you have one of them went to college. One of them went to Costa Rica.
Right. A gap year.
And so did you help in looking for scholarships for your daughters?
Oh, sure.
You helped?
They did most of it, and my wife did a bunch of it, but I helped a little bit, and it's not an easy process.
Okay, maybe I'll just say, so your wife did help.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to have to help?
Yeah, you should.
All right, well, I don't even know where to start. So on the line with us right now, the founder of a website called Road2College.com, Road2College.com, mm-hmm. Debbie Schwartz. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great, Debbie. Would you agree with me? It's a long, arduous process, and it's not an easy one sometimes.
Absolutely. Looking for private scholarships, you know, money that private companies or foundations are going to give out is it's possible to get that money, but it just takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. You got to find the right scholarships. You got to fill out the applications, and it's a lot of work.
So I don't even know where to begin. My son is looking at Belmont University in Nashville and DePaul. He's just going to be a senior in high school this year, but now's the time that I should start looking for scholarships or assist him in looking, right?
Yes. Actually, I would actually kind of separate out. There's different types of scholarships. There's private scholarships, which I just mentioned, and then there's money that the colleges themselves give out to students, and that's also kind of termed college scholarships, but a lot of that is either in institutional aid or in merit scholarships. And I actually usually recommend people that they try and focus on those types of money first, because you'll get a bigger bang for your effort in finding colleges that are going to give you more money than trying to look for the private scholarships.
I did notice that one of the colleges has on their website like scholarship opportunities, and they list a bunch of websites. Is that the best way to start?
My guess, and I haven't seen what you're talking about, is that those websites that they're referring you to are still the websites that help you find private scholarships, like the scholarships.com. A lot of the your states have their own private scholarship websites. But that's not going to help you find the scholarships that the schools provide. Sometimes it's actually calling the financial aid office. Sometimes it's looking at the schools, the departments that your student might be interested in. They have departmental scholarships. It's and then it's also kind of doing a lot of more upfront research before you even choose the schools that your child might apply to figure out which schools might be more generous in the money that they give out.
Debbie, would you agree with me that the price of your child's college education is very similar to airfare on any airline, in that no two people are paying the same? That's kind of the same principle, isn't it?
100%. Absolutely. You know, everybody is paying a different price, just as you mentioned, just like the airlines. Part of that is driven by everybody's own, you know, financial situation, what their income is, what their assets. And again, that's information you can know ahead of time. That's the purpose of what they call net price calculators that the government kind of enforced that the colleges must have on their websites. So you can go and find those calculators on the schools that your child is interested in. You can plug in all your information, and it's not a guarantee, but it should be, you know, close to what that school should cost you.
All right, and Road to College not only helps with financing and questions, but also with college admissions and how to go about that. Is that true?
Yes, we give information about the whole process. We tend to focus much more on the financing, you know, and how you're going to find money. But the reality is that, you know, financing and paying for college is not separate from how you get in, and there's a lot of strategies about the general admissions process that affect how much a school is going to cost you. You know, things like if you decide to go early decision, you know, that actually might impact how much financial aid you get because the school doesn't necessarily, may not, you know, feel that the need to give you as much financial aid. You know, and the whole college search process, choosing the schools that you might be interested in is an important step in how much money you'll eventually get. If, you know, if you don't apply to schools where you might get more financial aid, by the time the application process is over, it's too late to apply to those schools.
Debbie, go back for just a second for something you just said. So that early decision where you would think that could probably benefit me because I'll be one of the first kids in the school for any given year, that could actually turn around and hurt you. Is that right?
Yeah, because a school, you know, what, if you if a school accepts you, mm-hmm. you are bound to attend that school kind of regardless of what the financial aid offer is. So they don't have to be necessarily as generous in what they're going to offer you because if they say, yeah, we'll take you, you kind of have to go.
Mm-hmm.
There are minor circumstances. You know, if they give you a financial aid package that you truly cannot afford, you can, you know, get out of the commitment, but that doesn't happen that easily.
All right.
So wait a minute. If you apply at three schools and you get accepted to three schools, can't you just say no to two of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the obligation scared me. So you want to apply for scholarships through the actual university or college prior to your admission?
No, no, no. What you just said, you cannot apply early decision to multiple schools. You can only apply early decision to one school. Early decision happens in the fall. So you can only apply early decision to one school, and if you accept it, you're committed to go. If you forego applying early decision and you apply regular decision, you can apply to as many schools as you want.
It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, does it, Debbie? That's kind of not an extreme rarity, but it's in your child's best interest maybe to not go with that early decision, right? Financially, anyway.
Financially, yes. Yes, unfortunately, yes.
What about, like, finance plans? I know if you buy, you know, if you get a mortgage or a car, you can make payments. Do colleges and universities do that?
It varies by schools. You know, some schools, you have to have the assets up front, will allow you to pay for all 4 years, and then they lock in the price. Obviously, that's a big chunk up front, but you are then saving because schools are hiking their tuition, you know, 6% or more every year.
Wendy just turned a weird color I've never seen before, Debbie.
Now I'm more confused.
Oh, yeah, and broke.
And
that's a scary number.
You know, yeah. Community college is looking really good right about
sure,
now.
Sure, absolutely. Debbie, clear something up. A lot of people would think if their child isn't great at academics and doesn't really fit into that bracket of getting an academic scholarship and not particularly good at sports and wouldn't get a sports scholarship, that they're in some serious trouble. But even if your child isn't good at studies or sports, they can still get plenty of scholarship money, can't they?
They really can. First of all, I would say that some schools are kind of giving out extra scholarship money, depending even on the location of where you come from. You know, depending on where the school is, they're trying to attract students from different geographic locations. So they might actually, if, you know, a school is in Texas and they're trying to get a kid from Maine, they might, you know, give a little extra money because they want to get that geographic diversity to, you know, pull that student to Dallas, or to Texas. Some schools, you know, this idea of being a very good student, it's all relative. So you do want to be at the top range of what a school is looking for in terms of their test scores, but that varies very much. So, you know, the top range for one school might be much lower down than the top range of the elite schools. I think the media, we all focus on these elite schools, but there are a lot of other schools out there and a whole host of, you know, test scores that they're looking for.
And you mentioned test scores, which I know in a perfect world, you'd want an A honor roll student and someone who's done really well on the ACT and perhaps SAT, which more colleges are looking at. But what is more important in your opinion, the test scores or like the grade point average?
That's really a good question. I'd say my gut for getting scholarships, merit scholarships, it may be test scores because that's something that that colleges can kind of look at across the board and it doesn't really matter what school you came from. But for the general admissions process of, you know, whether or not we're going to the college is going to accept you or not, I think that your GPA is very important, and particularly, you know, as they always say, the rigor of the classes that you take. So they do like to see that a student kind of pushes themselves to take, you know, the hardest courses that they can at their school. So I think for scholarships, maybe it's the test scores, but for getting in, you know, GPA is just as important.
Here's a great text question, Debbie. The question is there any college out there that gives scholarships for second, third, and fourth students? I assume this means you already have one student in your family attending a particular college.
No, fourth year. Oh, like, fourth, you know, year? Sophomore, junior, senior.
Oh,
like,
I get it. Okay.
It's not just for freshmen, right. And that is a great question.
That is a great question. Actually, I will answer both those questions, because the first one is, it's also a reality. Some schools do give you a discount if you have a second child.
Just
going.
Like daycare.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like daycare. You're right.
They give you a discount.
Without all the spittle.
Yeah. I will also say, I just came across this the other day. Some schools give you a discount if you're a twin for the same purpose, because you've got two going at the same time. So I kind of joke with all my friends who had twins. The first years, I mean, obviously were horrible taking care of twins at the same time, but they are really reaping the benefits when it comes to college tuition.
Unless you're my partner, Bill, who has twins who are going to separate places.
They're going to different schools, and they're conjoined twins. So we're in for a battle, aren't we?
Can we take a quick break? Debbie Schwartz is on the line. We have some listeners who have some calls. She is the founder of RoadToCollege.com. I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot of time on this, because now I'm more confused.
Sure.
Road2college.com. Debbie Schwartz with us. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, the father of twins.
Conjoined twins. Yep.
And Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right, it's summer. People don't want to think about school, but summer's pretty much almost over.
Oh!
It really is. We have Debbie Schwartz on the line with us, the founder of a website called RoadToCollege.com, the two being a numerical two, so RoadToCollege.com. And Debbie, you had mentioned something about early decision when a kid is applying to a school. Here's my question. You have a kid who wants to apply to maybe four different colleges. Do you just do the general admission plan there?
I mean, if they don't, out of the four colleges, if they really don't feel strongly about one in particular, and, you know, it's important that you do see different financial aid offers, yes, I would apply to the four schools and not necessarily go the early decision route.
So is early decision just like if you have your heart set on one school and one school only, and you want that commitment because you want to go there or nowhere?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's basically, you know, it's on both ends. You know, when you apply early decision, you as a student are saying, this school is my top school. I am, you know, really want to get in here. And therefore, if the college accepts me, I'm going, because I'm going to make that commitment. And for some kids, they know that. For other kids, it's like too early in the process, because you do have to make that decision, you know, kind of starting in August, September, because usually those early decision deadlines are November 1st. So if you're going to fill out the application, you know, you got to start in September and October. And for some kids, they just aren't ready and they're still exploring schools out there, and that's okay.
Debbie, talk about leveraging in this respect. One of my daughters, my daughter Reese, had narrowed it down to two schools. One of them offered her a pretty sizable scholarship, the other nowhere near as much. And we were able to go into the school that didn't offer as much and say, look, she's on the fence between the two. They have offered her a huge scholarship. What can you do for us? And they did. They bent quite a bit. Is that commonplace?
It is absolutely a possibility. You know, I can't say necessarily what the outcome is going to be by the college, but if you have two financial aid offers, and one is significantly different than the other, absolutely go back to the school that didn't give as much money and aid, and particularly if it's a school that your child really does want to go to. If you express, you know, how much they want to go, and it's really a financial decision at that point that you may not be able to afford it as much because another school has given you a better package,
mm-hmm.
you know, you basically laid your cards on the table, and if the school, you know, wants to and can, they will give money. And a lot of times they do kind of are able to come up with a little bit more.
So do they just make up the rules as they go along?
Yes. They do.
I mean, a little bit, yes.
All right, and Bill, you often bring up the story when I'm thinking about my kid applying at colleges. There was someone, a friend of yours, who got he had a perfect 4.0 grade point average.
And a perfect ACT and applied to three schools and didn't get into any of them with a perfect ACT score and great grades all through school. And one of the biggest reasons, we talked about proximity, you know, they live here on the North Shore and she wanted to get into Northwestern, and Northwestern flat out said, no, we're looking for kids from other parts of the country and the world.
See,
thanks,
that doesn't
no
seem fair or right.
It's not.
What are the rewards for, you know, a perfect ACT and a perfect grade point average?
Isn't that upsetting? It's very upsetting.
What do you think about
that,
Debbie?
I think they actually are rewards. It just may not be in your backyards, unfortunately. You know, like just in that case, if she applied locally, as you said, they're looking for geographic diversity. But if she had applied someplace else, farther away,
right,
they actually may have given her a very good scholarship because of her grades and because of her, you know, location.
And that's the type
right.
of
it still
research.
Seems it seems so unfair because you're told all through your scholastic career you got to study hard and work hard and get those great grades and get a good score on your ACT, and then, you know, the world's your oyster, and then when you do, you don't get anything out of it. It's upsetting.
All right,
it's upsetting. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. We have time for one question, and this is Kevin. Kevin, Debbie Schwartz from RoadToCollege.com. Very quickly.
I will be very quick. Lovely guest. Thank you, Debbie. And, okay, so what happened with my son? He went for early decision. The thing I want to share with your listeners is once you do the early decision and you are accepted, what we learned is that it's our obligation or the student's obligation to contact any other schools to which they applied and withdraw their application. Are you familiar with that? Because the other thing was, if you don't do it, then you kind of get blackballed, like you didn't honor your
commitment.
Request.
Commitment.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I am familiar with that.
I'll listen.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is your responsibility. Unfortunately, it sounds like in your case, maybe a guidance counselor didn't explain that. But once you are accepted, early decision, you've basically made that commitment to the school that you are going. And if you have already submitted applications to other colleges, you have to contact those colleges and withdraw them because basically, you know, they have your application in the pool and they would be looking at it and potentially could give you a spot when you can't take that spot. And so you're taking the spot away from another student.
From what I understand here, it seems like it's harder to get into a college than to apply for a job in your field.
It is. It can be.
It's harder, and it's become a very complicated process, unfortunately.
Debbie, thanks so much. Debbie did a great job, and you can find out more at her website, Road to College, the word road, the number two, college. I think you stole that from Boys to Men, but I'm not going to say anything about it. But I think you did. Go to roadtocollege.com. Debbie, thanks so much. Have a great week.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be hanging out at that website.
I know.
Continuously.
I know. All right. A quick break, and then the news with Veronica Carter, then more of us, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, thanks, Veronica, by the way. Well, as the weekend went on, we had a couple of more shocking stories, most notably what went on in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with the police officers that were shot and killed. I'm sure you've seen the letter. If you haven't seen the letter, we're going to read you the letter from one of the slain police officers in Baton Rouge. His name is Montrell Jackson. Did you read this? It was all over the place yesterday and again this morning.
Yeah, I mean, he posted it on his Facebook page, and then things changed in his life.
Yes, they did dramatically. It says, again, this is Montrell Jackson. He's one of the police officers who lost their lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana over the weekend. Here's what he says. It doesn't go on long, but very poignant words.
He posted this, by the way, 2 weeks before he was killed
on Facebook. Yes, he did. He says, Montrell says, I am tired physically and emotionally, disappointed in some family, friends, and officers for some reckless comments, but hey, what's in your heart is in your heart. I still love you all because hate takes too much energy, but I definitely won't be looking at you the same. Thank you to everyone that has reached out to me or my wife. It was needed and much appreciated. I swear to God, I love this city, but I wonder if this city loves me. In uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks, and out of uniform, some consider me to be a threat. I've experienced so much in my short life, and these last 3 days have tested me to the core. When people you know begin to question your integrity, you realize that they don't really know you at all. Look at my actions. They speak loud and clear. Finally, I personally want to send prayers out to everyone directly affected by this tragedy. He's referring here to Dallas. These are trying times. Please don't let your hate infect your heart. This city must and will get better. I'm working in these streets, so any protesters, officers, friends, family, or whoever, if you see me and you need a hug or want to say a prayer, I got you.
He posted this actually after Alton Sterling was shot and killed outside that Baton Rouge convenience store. And then subsequently, five officers gunned down in Dallas, Texas. I was catching up on Orange is the New Black, and I get these AP alerts, and these alerts pop up. And, Bill, I have to be honest with you. Sometimes I have to, like, rub my eyes and go, now, wait, is this in my fantasy world where I'm watching, where I'm streaming something, or is this real life? Because it's just keeps happening, and I have a sick feeling that it's going to keep happening.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible, isn't it? It's funny. I made a similar analogy. I was thinking about this over the weekend to television, like you just did with Orange is the New Black. In Walking Dead, with all that's going on, and I know it's fantasy and it's hard to combine these with real life, but I kept thinking, ultimately, in that show, it's humans killing humans that are the bigger threat. It's not the zombie apocalypse. It's the fact that the survivors are killing each other. That's kind of what's happening, not just in the United States, but around the world. It's people killing people. That's our biggest enemy is ourselves. It shouldn't be that way, but that's what we're up against is each other, not the elements, but ultimately each other. And it seems to not be taking a break. It just seems to be a relentless battle over and over and over in different cities, both nationally and internationally. But boy, it's tough right now.
Who's the former police superintendent? McCarthy.
Yeah, Gary McCarthy.
Gary McCarthy, yes. He was on the air with Dean on Sunday, and I heard him talk, and he just said, you know, this problem is twofold. There are definitely some officers that need to be taught some things, but the majority of police officers are doing their job right. Unfortunately, the few bad ones are giving everyone in the police force a bad name. But it's also the noncompliance that happens. I mean, I know I'm a suburban white girl, and I get pulled over by a police officer, and I'm scared. I don't want to go to jail. I don't know what I've done. Right. I am going to comply with whatever they ask me to do.
Right.
This noncompliance, Gary McCarthy was saying, is in poorer neighborhoods, don't have a lot of opportunity. They don't have a lot of money. They don't have good jobs. They don't have health insurance. So in a way, their noncompliance, Gary McCarthy said he can understand where it's coming from, because it's like, wait, the government's not taking care of me, so now why should I obey a police officer? We're not being taken care of. And there is a lot of truth to that. But how do you solve this? It's like, we know what the problem is, but how is this going to be eradicated?
I don't know. I have no idea how. It's amazing that, I mean, the volume of stories like this that just keep happening and happening and happening. Here's a text from 773. My wife is a Chicago police officer. We had a similar discussion last night. She feels some of our friends will sit with us and some will sit across from us. Yeah, I get it.
It is a terrible time to be a police officer. And again, such a small percentage of bad cops are bringing the whole police industry down.
You know what I was thinking the other day? Again, I know this is a little bit of a stretch, but hear me out on this. My wife attends church far more regularly than I do, meaning I don't and she does. She was telling me a couple of years ago how her priest at some point mentioned the fact what a difficult time it is to be a priest. This is when the child molestations were at an all-time high a couple of years ago. And he said to the congregation point blank, this is not an easy time to be a priest. He said, I have a niece and a nephew, and if people see me in the park playing with my niece or nephew, they stare at me. You know, they look at me like, what's going on there? What's happening there? And I got it. You know, I totally understand that, is that with what's happened in the news, then with priests, now with police officers.
And they're grouped together.
Yeah. There's a stereotyping. Yeah. Yeah.
Again, we brought this up last week. We were talking. Again, I'm a white female, okay? Totally different. I understand that. Mm. But if you have an officer who is being rude or inappropriate, don't you still follow the rules? Because you're not going to win. You're not going to win. And then you follow the rules and maybe they do arrest you. Then that's when you get an attorney.
Right.
I mean, don't you still have to listen to the police?
I'm with you all the way. Yes, follow the rules. But I could see where if the storyline was different, if I was an African-American who was getting stopped regularly by police officers, do you know the story with Chris Rock, how Chris Rock came out a couple of months ago and said, I get stopped all the time. They see a black guy driving a nice car.
Well, they want his autograph.
But cops just see.
No, I know.
A black guy driving a nice car, and maybe he is going a couple miles over the speed limit, but those could be the same couple of miles you or I are going over, and we don't get stopped. I know there's a double standard. There's no doubt about it. There is a double standard.
But now I'm wondering, with the body cams that are on the police officers now, shouldn't that help ease the fear of African Americans? Because this is now, police officers are going to be more responsible. They can't be.
Except that the body cams and the dashboard cams have been in place, not in all instances, but in several instances, and the numbers seem to be going up, not down. Like you would think, if everybody believes what I believe, which is every moment could be on tape somewhere, no matter what's going on. If you're walking around the city, there's a tape of you somewhere, you would imagine, but the numbers aren't decreasing, they're increasing.
But, and I could be wrong, but I thought the body cameras have, like, during the Laquan McDonald thing, they weren't wearing body cams.
I don't think they were wearing body cams there.
And now it seems like, not that we're policing the police, but we are kind of, because if they have these body cams on, doesn't that make them be responsible for their actions?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to remember which of the cases recently, because there have been so many, but in one of the cases they said, yeah, you saw what you saw on the body cam, but you didn't see what preceded it. You didn't see the 20 minutes of what we went through before the body cams for some reason. I don't know why not. I don't know why.
All right, quick break and phone calls, 312-981-7200. I am scared. My kids were like, yesterday, they said, I don't even want to go out and play Pokemon Go. I don't know when this is going to happen. They were half kidding, but there was a lot of truth behind it. They said, I just want to stay in the house. Mm-hmm. It's scary out there in every neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. More police shootings. It seems like these are happening more and more frequently. I don't think anyone's becoming numb to these, but I think we're starting to realize this is becoming a way of life, and I have a sick feeling in my stomach that that's going to keep happening.
I don't know that I mentioned before, I should have if I didn't, the officer whose letter I read to you, the Baton Rouge, Louisiana police officer, he is African-American. He's a black man who wrote that letter. I would imagine that there's so much going on in the minds of any police officer right now, but to be a black police officer in the middle of this has got to just tear at you from every direction.
Well, I think the line in his Facebook post 2 weeks before he was shot dead brings it home. In uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks, and out of uniform, some consider me a threat.
How about that? So how do you win that? No matter what you do, no matter where you are, if you're home or at work, if you're dressed for the job or not, somebody's looking at you sideways going, that's a dangerous individual right there.
All right. John wanted to say something. Hi, John. We don't have a lot of time.
Okay. No, it's just that I don't know if you heard yourself what you said a little bit ago. It was that the government isn't taking care of these people. Under that scenario in today's world, if the government isn't taking care of me, I don't have a loaf of bread, I should be able to walk into a 7-Eleven, steal the loaf, and shoot the clerk. The government, why don't people take care of themselves and get to the root. Who put these people in this state of poverty or social slavery? How did we get there? How? Why? Those are the questions.
Those are great questions, and I don't know. And these neighborhoods where maybe sometimes people don't finish school, so it's hard to find a job. I'm not saying it's right for them to go in and steal, but they are not getting taken care of in the way of health care and assistance and education. And that's where, and I, again, this is what Gary McCarthy had said, it's like they feel let down, so why should they comply? The noncompliance has, listen, if I had, I've heard, I've talked to black people who have black sons that are 18 and up, and they say, listen, it's a bad world in which we live right now, but you gotta follow. And that's my question. You mentioned Chris Rock getting pulled over.
Frequently.
Don't you just say, you know, I don't know. Again, I can't speak being a white female, but don't you just hand over your registration and your license and they go, okay, fine, everything's cool, and you move along and there is no incident. I can see where you would feel bothered that you get pulled over just because of the color of your skin, but don't you just comply and move along and call it a day? If you don't comply, that's when all this bad stuff is happening.
Before you jump to color of skin, what happened to draw the attention of the police officer to you? There are thousands, millions of cars on the road. Something happened that the police officer saw you. Why?
Well, there's a joke that's not a funny joke, but in the black community, there's an offense called DWB, which is driving while black. And they say that's all it takes. If you're driving a car, you go a half a mile over the speed limit, they pull you over, driving while black. And I mean, I have no doubt that that happens to some extent. You know, if you were pulled over with any regularity for driving a couple miles over and hassled, I could see where it would get a little troublesome, a little bothersome. I wouldn't ever take it to the extreme that, you know, we've heard, but
it would be,
it'd be awful.
A pain in the ass every
right.
time you drive to get out. John, thank you so much for your call. We have time for one more, and it's Rick. Rick, we have about 30 seconds here.
All right, real quick. I'm surprised that this, since Columbine, I'm surprised this, back then I said this is going to continue happening more and more. But with the cops don't police themselves. They don't take themselves responsible for when they make mistakes. And the other big problem is that, you know, I'm a white guy. I've been pulled over many times. I've been harassed by cops. I have friends who are cops. And they, when you deal with the cops, it's not just dealing with them. All of a sudden now you're out money, you're out time, you're out effort. And if the cop had some common sense and just dealt with you on a one-to-one level instead of just saying, oh, let the courts deal with it, and pushed everybody into the court system, and everybody now has to fight for, you know, I don't have any money, I don't have a lawyer, I don't have all this stuff. But it's all petty little crap that the cops keep forcing us that we're always criminals, we're always doing something wrong. They're out there always looking for us that we're doing something wrong. Now we're tired of always being looked at as always doing something wrong.
So, Rick, let me ask you, and I understand that. You're tired of
doing things wrong, and the government won't step up and go, oh, this cop that got busted for a DUI, he's not only fired, but he's in jail for the next 10 years. He should know better. The cops, they're not special. They're not born any more special than anybody else. They go to school like everybody else. So why are they in a different category? They need to be held responsible for what they do. And inside themselves, they need to look at each other and go, okay, this guy's the cancer. We need to cut him out instead of looking the other way and going, oh, the blue wall. Oh, we need to take care of ourselves.
And the brotherhood, and I think that is changing. But, Rick, what is your attitude when you get pulled over since you're so disgusted? And I don't blame you for being pulled over. Are you respectful? Do you try and get this done? Maybe if you're nice and respectful, he'll go, oh, forget it. Get your taillight fixed tomorrow.
I am, but always they always seem like they're angry or they're pissed off that they've had to pull you over or that they're saving your life, that they're doing something, that they're intervening and making your life that much better. And I have yet to have a cop make my life or save my life or make my life better. Every time I've encountered them, my life has been hassled and I've had to pay money out and I've had to waste time.
But there are other cops that will save your life someday, Rick.
I I will save my own life. I will not put it up to them to save mine.
All right. Well, good luck. Drive safely. We have to run. But there are some bad officers out there that do need to be responsible for their actions. But such a small percentage. And I don't have the facts in front of me, but I think the majority of police officers are out there to serve and protect, and they want to get home to their families for dinner.
No doubt about it. We need to take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news. We'll check in with Eric Zorn in just a little bit. Thanks, everybody, for contributing. Greatly appreciated. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. In the studio with us right now, the feistiest of all Chicago columnists, Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Hello, feisty Eric Zorn.
How you doing?
How are you? Everything
I'm
good? You're feisty. You look feisty.
Really feisty, yeah.
I'm afraid for my life.
Really? Yeah. Tell your face that because you don't have the feist going
right
now.
Oh,
come on.
It's early. It's early in the day. I get feistier and feistier as the day goes on. Until
I bet you do.
Until
you,
finally in the evenings, I'm just boiling over.
You just returned from a high school reunion,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, 40th high school reunion.
Congratulations.
Very fun.
What was that like?
Well, it was, let's see, I think about maybe a quarter of the people from our graduate, we combined, it's from Ann Arbor, Michigan, we combined the high schools there because they're just, you know, fewer and fewer of us want to come to these reunions, I guess.
So oh, is that true?
About,
yeah.
About a quarter of the people who graduated came
out.
And it was really fun. I think the first couple of reunions, like the 10th and the 20th, people are still kind of a little bit worried about where they are in life and how they compare to their peers and how the, you know, the old cliques and the resentments that are still there. But by 40, all that stuff is gone. And you have conversations with people and big hugs with people who, I had a situation where I was talking to a guy and I was thinking he was one of the stars of the football team. And I thought, you know, he thinks that we were used to be friends, but we never spoke in high school. This is the first conversation we have ever had.
So he was one of the proud crowd?
No, he's a good guy. Just it was one of those things where it's like these cliques, these barriers between groups have all broken down now.
But go back to that belief on his behalf that you guys had some sort of a friendship going.
Well, I'm not sure that I think he may have been pretending that, you know, I mean, we just were like, hey, how you doing? Good to see you again. It's like, well, you know, we never actually we were never friends, you know, but that doesn't matter anymore. I think it mattered at 10, maybe it mattered at 20, but I don't think it matters anymore.
I thought the same, I've talked to other people who went to different high schools who had the same belief that you did, where that first one, the gist of it was to try to impress everybody into believing
I'm doing okay.
Life couldn't be better.
Yeah. Here's my beautiful
married
girlfriend.
To a supermodel. Yes. I got $1 billion a year job. I drive a Ferrari. But then by the second and third one, everybody does become real.
Those start to fade. Yeah. And you're trying to prove to people who weren't friends with you or didn't like you that you were cooler than you thought you were or they thought you were. And yeah, so I mean, if I had any advice to give anyone, it's like, if you must skip one, skip the 10th. Don't start skipping them later on.
Right.
Because there were people, our organizing committee, I was talking to them, and they said they were finding people who wouldn't return phone calls or emails, that they're still nursing some painful grudges. And these aren't people who you'd have thought, oh, well, boy, of course, you know, he was a loser. No wonder he doesn't come back. I mean, these are people who are very successful.
But they've moved on. Some people don't want to look back.
They have just moved on, yeah, which is interesting. I found a lot of value in hanging out with all these people who are of our, you know, of my exact same vintage and people who I grew up with and could tell stories, you know, about.
But wouldn't you think just by nature, and I guess everybody has a narrative in their head, if we watch television shows or go to movies or read books, we like to find out how any story begins, plays out, and ends. But for so many people, they have that attitude of, that was a long time ago. What do I need to see those people again for? But I'm just curious as to where those stories went.
Right. Now, Facebook does help answer some of those questions.
And that's probably why a lot of people don't go to reunions anymore either, because I just know this is going to be our 35th anniversary or
reunion.
Mm-hmm. And I was class president, so I want to know who was on the planning committee, because I don't really want to do
anything.
That's
your job.
I'm not doing it.
You were the president. You have to.
I just wanted to win like Trump did. I don't really care about the role.
Make big promises that you can't keep.
But with Facebook, we have like every, you know, homecoming at RB High School. We kind of get people together at various locations and bars in the area. So I don't know if anybody's expecting a big 35-year reunion.
Well, the thing is, this was a long weekend. It actually started for me on Friday and went all the way through Sunday afternoon. There were the various events going all the way along. The least fun part was the actual reunion,
the event banquet itself. Yeah.
It was too big. It was too noisy. There were too many people there. I had a number of smaller reunions. On Friday morning, I played golf with a guy who I hadn't seen since graduation.
Really?
And he was one of my best friends. And we just like went our separate ways. And it was so fun to spend 18 holes yakking with him about both of our lives and stuff. So
and was it comfortable again? Like you just got
instantly,
back and it was like
instantly,
you picked up where you left off?
Yeah, there's no awkwardness. No like, why weren't we friends after we graduated? Nothing like that.
Will you keep in closer contact with him now that you've reconnected?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
good.
So. I mean, I don't think we're going to be visiting each other's families and stuff. But yeah, I think that we will be, you know, in touch. And it's so easy with messages on Facebook,
right,
social
sure.
media, and so on, and like, you know, that kind of thing. So that was really the smaller moments.
Those are always more
lot,
fun, the
yeah.
less formal.
Yeah.
And a number of us were sort of vowing, like, you know, we're not, let's not wait another 10 years for a subset of us to get together again. Because
what was the biggest surprise over the weekend of anything that, or anybody from your childhood?
Ooh, boy, that's a tough question. I guess I would say that to me, the biggest surprise was how well so many of the people were doing.
Oh, good.
Even people who had not been doing that well at 10 and 20, they seem to really be comfortable in their own skin. And that's the thing that really, I think, happens after this much time is, you know, you're no longer apologetic about not being, you know, who everybody thought you might have been.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, yeah, I do this. I own a business. I have a pool cleaning business. I'm not ashamed of that. It's a good business.
Because then you start doing what you want to do. You know, as you get older, in high school, you do what you think other people think you should do.
Right.
And then when you grow up and become an adult, you go, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Right.
And then you're happy inside. So.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing to remember with this is it's a self-selecting group. Anytime you go to a big reunion like this, these are the people who feel comfortable enough to come back. You know, if you were to try to assemble
sure.
people who didn't show up for various reasons of maybe feeling alienated, you might get a very different picture. But
you know what was a shock for me? Now, my last one was 7 years ago. Yeah, 7 or 8 years ago. The amount of people in my class that were grandparents, but at the same exact time, there were two different couples, one trying to have their first child and one who had just had their first child, were all the exact same age. So some of them were grandparents and some were first-time parents.
That's very true. There were a couple of people that one of my best friends from high school had as a two-year-old.
Yeah.
And some of my other friends have kids in their 30s now. So
wow.
It's a really big range. We're looking at the guy with a two-year-old going, really?
Yeah.
You know, this seems like a bit much. But yeah, it's a big...
whenever God gives you a baby or...
But there's a big range. And there are also people who've taken really great care of themselves or really fit still. And then there's...
Some are a mess.
And then those of us who are, you know, less
right.
youthful.
And you can't say, look at you, you're a mess. What
happened
to you?
Don't
they have mirrors in Ann Arbor, Michigan? What's wrong with you?
Years have been unkind to you. Yeah, you don't say that. So.
I bet a lot of people started working out, like, you know,
oh,
a year
yeah.
beforehand.
No doubt about it.
I'm going to do it for the fifth year.
Right, that's
so
the
I
year.
Start now.
That'll be your year.
Time.
Eric Zort is here. He's fit. He's feisty. Are you kidding me? 312-981-7200. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
The feisty Eric Zorn is here. Some people were saying that Eric is fresh from his 40th high school reunion, and people are saying, I hated my 40th, will not go to any more. People were still hanging out with their old cliques.
But that's almost inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
why would you do that?
You see your friends from all that long ago, and you don't normally see them, so yeah.
I was really struck by how people were crossing those clique boundaries, and people were, and it's a little bit of pretense, where you just... You sort of pretend like you see somebody like, oh, yeah, we were close. When you,
yeah.
Both of you know you really weren't, but you have a nice conversation anyway. I didn't find that. People, obviously, you gravitate toward people you know.
Sure.
But I was in a number of conversations that were people with I'd never had
I would think,
before,
sure.
So.
And someone else says, went to my 40th 3 years ago, was disturbed by how many friends had become unemployed and were struggling, although many had very good positions. You do
yeah,
run the gamut.
A mixture of luck stories, you definitely there. I was dismayed how old everybody looked. walked in, who are these people? And then I caught a look at myself in the mirror and go, who's that guy?
Right.
Who's that guy?
Did you have some kids? I've had this at reunions where I say kids, and now they're considerably older. They put fake names on the name tags just to mess with everybody, because then you go, are you sure that's who you are?
I don't think anyone did. That's a great idea. Next, I'll do that on the 50th. But everyone knows their memory's shot anyway.
Right.
They took our senior picture and
yes.
put it on our
oh,
name tag.
Oh, they did?
Yes,
that's brilliant.
Yeah. I looked like Justin Bieber. I had my hair down.
You were pre-Bieber.
I was pre-Bieber. If only there had been YouTube then.
Ah.
I wouldn't be here on this radio station.
Oh, darn it all.
On the networks.
Eric, you have recently written about Rod Blagojevich, talking about rehabilitation for Rod. What do you think?
Well, he's facing resentencing on August 9th last year. So you remember the appellate court overturned, was it six of the counts? I'm trying to remember the net number now, but a few of the counts that he was convicted of.
And how many years did that shave off?
Well, it hasn't shaved off any years yet. He gets sent back to the trial judge, who clearly had no love for Blagojevich during the trial, for resentencing. And the government argues that these are sort of highly technical overturning the verdict. And essentially it had to do with him trying to sell his Senate seat.
Yeah.
And they argued that the parts that had to do with Valerie Jarrett, who's going to trade an appointment of Valerie Jarrett for a job for him in the cabinet, that was okay. And that was lumped together in the charges with some of the other stuff he was offering and trying to get for the Senate seat. And so when you lump those together, so they needed to go back and retry those charges on the Senate seat, mm-hmm. without particular bits of evidence in there, which is, like I say, it's a fairly technical legal ruling. And the government feels that they could have convicted him again on those same charges without the Valerie Jarrett information. But they didn't decide to retry him. And I'm glad they didn't. I don't want another Blagojevich trial. That's just, you know. It's
circus.
Unseemly circus, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he's going back for the thing, but his lawyers say, well, all he was doing was just kind of he was enriching himself. He wasn't enriching himself. He was just trying to advance his political fortunes.
Yeah.
And it was all for political reasons. And he was trying to advance an agenda, and yet he's supposed to be remorseful. And they say, oh, and look how rehabilitated he is. He's playing music in prison and he's tutoring people. And mm-hmm. I have no doubt that he's a model prisoner. I've met the guy a couple times and he's eager to be loved. I'm sure that he's a great prisoner. But it's not really about that. They don't have him in prison because he's a danger. Like, oh, well, we can let him out now. He's not going to, you know, commit crimes on his neighbors. That's
punishment.
Not why he's there to be punished. And part of that, it has to be genuine remorse. And he doesn't, you know, and he has to accept that he committed crimes and be remorseful. He's sorry that he got caught.
Sure.
But he's still not willing to admit that these were crimes.
Still and very strict sentence,
says,
in my
says,
opinion.
I was on the right side of the law. And I think that he will, if he is able to figure out some way to tell the court, yeah, I broke the law. I know I broke the law. I know I shouldn't have used my power in this way for my own enrichment. If he's willing to admit that, he may catch a break. If he doesn't, the judge is perfectly entitled to keep him in at 14 years. The idea is obviously not that he's dangerous, but that you have to give these really long sentences to show these politicians they can't keep abusing their power the way they have been. And
pretty soon, every politician's going to be in jail.
There's
going to be a politician
half
jail.
Of our governors.
Well, I know.
Half
yeah,
of
but
our
Wendy,
former
there
governors.
Was this recent Supreme Court ruling with the governor of Virginia where the Supreme Court gave a lot of latitude to politicians for doing sort of this is not exactly an official act. You can take all kinds of gifts from people and you can arrange meetings. And so, I mean, they really opened the door pretty wide to the behavior that we would find really kind of sleazy. And the Supreme Court said, well, that's just politics. Politics
right.
is kind of sleazy.
Right.
Now, what this doesn't really apply to Blagojevich, because what Blagojevich did was bigger. You remember he was like holding up money for children's
yeah.
hospitals and so on like that until he got campaign donations. I mean, this we're going to relive. In the next few weeks, as we get closer to the sentencing, we're going to relive the stuff that he did and, the stuff,
yeah.
and why we were so disgusted by the abuse of office that Blagojevich.
When he is eventually released, what is your prediction for him? What do you think he'll do?
Well, he'll probably get into motivational speaking.
Do you think is that your guess?
Yeah, that would be my guess. He can get back into politics. People say he can't be real. He can't run for state office anymore, but he could run for Congress if he wanted.
The Jailhouse Rockers will be playing at the Metro.
One of the things is like, I've said this, that if he would agree to move to Hawaii and just be quiet and live there quietly with his wife and, you know, grandkids that are going to show up probably, I would be fine. I kind of wanted to go away, you know, when he's done. I don't want him to be here insisting on his own innocence and telling us that he was on the right side of the law and he's a victim of a system gone wrong and a victim of a prosecutor out of control and so on. He betrayed the trust of the people, and he broke the law. And as soon as he admits that and just and goes with that, then he can talk about redemption. He can talk about what else you can do with your life. But that's kind of my prediction. So anyway,
let's wait and see.
We'll see.
Eric, thank you very much. Welcome back.
Thank you.
From your reunion. He is so feisty. Feistier than ever, I think. We'll take a quick break. Then we'll find out what Suzanne Muchen has on today's Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's us, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Now, it would have been very easy in introducing our next guest to say that he's one of the stars of Community or The Soup and then play the theme songs of either Community or Soup. But we didn't do that. We went ultra subtle on you. Joel McHale joins us right now. Hello, Joel.
Hello.
And do you know what that theme is from, Joel?
No. Oh, that one that you just played?
Yes. You can win a prize, Joel, if you know it.
Phil, we're old.
Oh, I'm going to go with Lost.
No, it's not Lost. A great guess, though. McHale's Navy.
Oh, my gosh.
We went as...
My last name
is McHale. I know. We were going to play a Billy Joel song first and then McHale's Navy, but we didn't do that.
Oh,
and we didn't
gosh.
Have time to edit them together.
Right.
That would have been perfect.
I have never heard either of those jokes. That is incredible.
I thought you'd enjoy those.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, it's volume.
It's magic.
The level that I am to expect when I come there to do comedy. I am...
Would you mind if we plug that? Would that upset you? Joel is coming to Zany's in St. Charles this upcoming Thursday for two shows, a 7 o'clock show and a 9:15 show. Zany's.com has all your ticket information. How are you? Both Wendy and I are huge fans of yours.
God bless Bill and Wendy. I'm well. It's only going to be 105 here in Los Angeles today, so I'm going to be I'm going to sleep in my refrigerator.
That's not good. You'll catch your death of cold, Joel. Don't do that.
Oh, I'll suffocate before that.
Are you a believer in dying for your art? Is that a huge thing to you?
This was just to keep cool. No, I would never. I would
you
never
would die for your art.
My art.
No.
That seems there would be no way to get paid for that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, why would anyone do that?
Pass it on to my family, but then I wouldn't be enjoying.
No, what do you get out of that?
Why would you do that? You know, someday I'll retire, maybe, if I start saving my money now. Why do I, you know, I want to use my own money.
Don't do it.
Yeah, now.
Right.
Right.
When I die, hopefully I will have spent the last dollar about 15 minutes before.
Sorry, kids.
A great sound plan.
Are you a good planner? Because you need to be in order to make that happen.
No, I hire people.
That's better.
I plan on hiring people at this point.
Perfect. Joel, I have to go back in time with you just a little bit. When Jon Stewart announced that he was leaving The Daily Show, everybody made a list up of who should be the next host of The Daily Show, and your name topped a lot of those people's lists. And then the story goes, and I need you to clear this up for us, the story goes they approached you or wanted to approach you, and you just said, I'm not smart enough for that job. Is that possible?
Well, part of that is right, and most of it's wrong. But what happened was, no, I was asked in an interview if I wanted that job, and I said, I'm not smart enough to do that job. So, I was never approached to host that show, because at the time I was on The Soup.
Right.
And they were very smart in not making an offer, because, again, not smart enough to do that job.
Well, it turned out pretty well for you because I loved you in The X-Files. We're both huge X-Files fans. So to see that come back with a reboot, you were great on that.
Oh, thank you. I couldn't believe it was happening. I felt like I had bid on an auction item. And, they said, and you will get to say the words Mulder and Scully out loud to Mulder and Scully on the set of it. I felt like it was some sort of weird fan fiction thing, and I couldn't.
You were a fan of the original?
The other thing, I can't believe they haven't done more.
I know. Well, what's happening with that? Because I
don't know. I guess talk to Fox. Because I know that Jillian and David wanted to do more, and I think Chris Carter did, I'm sure. But I guess when you get 55 million viewers on your re-airing, then that's a pass.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. So you did, as Wendy pointed out.
Believe me, I would walk to Vancouver from here.
Were you a fan of the original X-Files?
No, I'd never seen it. Yes, of course.
Well, you know, you're young. Some people haven't. This reboot helped, like, I have a 13-year-old son who got way into it, and I said, I have all the episodes on VHS somewhere. If we have a VCR to play it, we can watch it.
Well, you can stream it now. You know, it's
all... Yeah, I know.
Streaming. There's some of those episodes for a 13-year-old would be pretty disturbing.
Oh, yeah, most of them. Most of them. So yeah. What's the show, like, if you went back to your childhood, other than X-Files, if they brought back this show or made it into a movie, what would be the one you just would have to take?
Probably McHale's Navy.
It would be McHale's Navy.
You open the interview,
definitely. Yes.
What show would I want to be turned into a movie?
With you in it. You have to be in it.
Zero.
Nothing?
No, it's rebooting a television show and turning it into a movie now. I don't know. That's a lot of landmines.
It's hard to do that, isn't it?
And it's like they've...
Yeah, so I'm just going to go with Flipper.
Flipper?
That's kind of, or Sanford and Son. Those are the shows I loved as a kid.
Can I suggest a combination Flipper and Son? Would you be interested in that property?
As long as Billy Joel and the McHale's Navy theme composer would collaborate for the theme.
All right. Now, my next question is community-based. You were working alongside a Chevy Chase for a while. The man who invented Snarky, which you did well. You play Snarky very, very well. Was that interesting to work alongside the guy who kind of invented that attitude?
Well, I think you're wrong about who invented the snarky attitude.
You did.
I didn't. He didn't. I think it was going back to the god of snark.
Snark all the way back?
He's a Greek god, son of Zeus.
He was, right.
To work with Chevy was... you know, I couldn't believe I was working with him because it was somebody that I admired so much for all his work, and I couldn't believe he was there in front of, doing the show.
Yeah.
And we got along pretty well. I mean, he's a little crazy, but I love him.
He is a little crazy, though, isn't he? You're not exaggerating. He is a little crazy.
Yeah, but if you're not crazy and a comic doing what he did in his early career, if you weren't half crazy, then he wouldn't have been as successful as he was, because he was part of creating Saturday Night Live and the National Lampoon and things which reshaped comedy in America. Between Saturday Night Live and Monty Python and Mel Brooks, I mean, those guys redefined comedy for white people.
Throw SCTV in there, too.
Oh, I don't think so. Canadian.
No.
I don't understand.
Uh-oh. There's the Canadian bias we were told about. Joel, they warned us. Don't bring up Canada with Joel McHale.
I'm Canadian, so I'm allowed to say any of that. Yes, SCTV was terrific. I mean, it was... And then for also growing up, for me, Kids in the Hall was important shows. At the time, they were the best sketch comedy show on the air by a mile.
Yep. So good. Joel McHale is our guest. Joel's going to be performing at Zany's in St. Charles this upcoming Thursday. You got a 7 o'clock show and a 9:15 show. Visit zanies.com. All your ticket information is there. We'll come back and pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy along with Joel McHale on WGN.
I don't understand. Are we playing No Doubt because Gwen Stefani lived in Los Angeles and that's where Joel McHale lives? Is that our next little intro to him?
That's right.
That's a stretch.
Wendy.
Jeez.
I still blame Bill for most of this. But
come on, don't do that.
I didn't choose this. Hey, you know, you were Joel McHale on the line with us. He's in town for Zany's, St. Charles Zany's, Thursday, July 21st, 7 and 9:15 p.m. You can get your tickets at zanies.com, or we have a box office number, too, 630-524-0001. You were saying when we were talking X-Files, different material or bad material for a 13-year-old. How old are your kids?
11 and 8.
How is it being a dad? Are boys, girls, one of each?
They got both sets of organs.
Oh, cool. That's excellent.
But I don't know if that's the correct way to put it.
What do you get them for their birthday, then?
You can get them anything.
They're very adaptable.
Anything you want. It's great. I mean, it's like...
They're always satisfied.
Like before a baby shower, you already know the sex if you get it checked out. That's great. I got two boys, and We just moved, so in this one part above our garage, there was a big pile. I collect knives and swords. Yes, I'm weird.
Wow.
And they began making videos of them fighting with those swords, and they're razor sharp. And my wife texted me one of the videos and said, "You have to move these now." and that just warmed my heart because that's exactly what I did.
There's no way that'll end in disaster, Joel. That's impossible. You know that.
Sharpened swords have never hurt anyone.
Right, ever.
But so I want to ask you, I mean, do your boys fight? Because I have 13 and 17. They're both boys. And one minute they'll be doing Pokemon Go together and getting along and going out to lunch. And the next minute they're punching each other. Have you noticed that with boys?
No. They've never fought in their lives.
Nope.
Just stabbed each other with the knives.
We keep them sedated most of the time. They're under heavy sedation. Just come and get your cough syrup. And that's how it is. No, the two boys, 8 and 11, no, they don't fight at all. Just, it's amazing.
They get along all the time.
Liar.
Joel, I want to ask you, it's a question I ask all of our guests. What is your most valuable sword? That's the standard question. What is your most valuable sword?
Oh, I have it's made by this company called Cold Steel. It's a samurai sword. it's made with a bunch of, they forge their own steel, and it's the sharpest thing you've ever touched, and it's beautifully made. That's probably my most valuable one.
It's in a case, a display case of some kind?
I keep it in a silk sock.
Oh.
it's really nice. See, they take all these old techniques, and with the way they can make them now, the swords and the blades are 100 times stronger or something, so...
And when did this collection start?
Coldsteel.com. They're great.
Did it start with like a fishing knife? You were born in Rome. Is that true? Were you skewering something?
No, everybody gets born in Rome loves fishing knives. And well put together, Wendy, again. Nailed it.
Yeah, I guess I didn't
talk
put that together. Yeah, wow.
Files like detective work.
Yeah, that's why I'm not at Zanies. You are.
It started out with a bayonet that my grandfather gave me, a World War I American bayonet, which I still have.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And yes, being from Italy has, again, edged weapons are obsessive.
Yes.
Everyone there just loves them. It's like pasta.
How do you think you cut the bread in Italy?
Right. They have to have very sharp swords to do that.
Absolutely. And your wife's on board with this. She's she puts up with
absolutely
this.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
not.
She loves
no,
it. She doesn't like it.
She hates it. She hates it.
See,
yeah,
Bill,
it's bad.
Bill collects toys,
you have to allow for some constant midlife crisis.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it started when I was 11 or 8.
Yeah. How many do you have? How many swords and knives do you have?
Probably 20 swords and, I don't know, 100 knives easily.
That's more than everyone I know put together, Joel. If you put everyone I know put together, they don't have that many.
Yeah, well, then that should be a warning.
It is a warning.
Yeah, don't go near the house because it's well protected.
Yes, I do a lot of duel here.
Do you juggle? Can you juggle knives?
No, that's dumb. That's way.
That's where the line is drawn.
Not nearly as smart as leaving edged weapons just lying around.
Are you kidding? Of course. Joel, we have to ask you this too. We were watching footage of you doing the correspondence dinner a couple of years ago. Talk about that. That's got to be kind of jaunting. To all of a sudden, you got the president of the United States, and you're making fun of him, and he's right next to you. What was that like?
It was very like a normal day for me.
It was
just average day. Where you go and make fun of the most powerful person in the world.
Yeah.
It was very, it was wonderful and strange and terrifying, and I had nothing to compare it to. I don't think I'll ever be nervous again about anything. But it shows you that we live in the greatest country in the world, that you can stand up and ridicule its leader to his face.
Yeah.
And he laughs.
And you would not be put into a work camp or shot. I've talked to some reporters. They were like, yeah, that would totally happen in my country. If you said those things to your president, oh, yeah, you'd die.
It's the end.
But he has such a really good sense of humor, though, too.
He, no matter what your politics are, Obama is the best joke deliverer we've had in the modern era. I mean, obviously, Buchanan nailed it.
That guy was hysterical.
But no matter what your politics are, that guy knows how to deliver a joke.
And he's smooth over everything. Oh, I'm sorry, again, whether you like his politics or not, the guy knows how to run that office.
So when you're asked to do Kim Jong-un's correspondent dinner, do you think you'll do it, or will you pass on that?
Oh, I've done it twice.
Oh, you have? Yeah.
It's just a lot of praising and how amazing he is.
Not jokes, just praising.
Yeah, and then they blow a missile off, and then you eat some kimchi. It's wonderful. It's just a wonderful day.
Joel, it's so much fun to talk to you. Like I said, both Wendy and myself, huge fans of yours, and you're going to be in town this Thursday, Zanies and St. Charles. Two shows, a 7 o'clock show and a 9:15 show. Go to zanies.com for all the information.
Come to both shows.
Come to see them both.
See the same thing twice.
Why not?
But thank you for the interview and having me on. And Chicago is a magical place that I grew up going to, and I love it, so I can't wait to get there.
Well, part of our agreement to have you on is Wendy and I agreed to pick you up at the airport, so what time do you need us there?
4 o'clock.
All right.
We'll bring a silk sock for some of the weapons
for
you might
swords.
Be traveling with.
Stop talking dirty.
Joel, thank you. Have a great time.
Thank you, you guys.
Take
Good
care.
To talk to you.
You
Thanks
too.
So much.
It's Joel McHale, everybody. Zanies St. Charles. Go to zanies.com and find your ticket information there. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Veronica, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, and if you want to jump in, you can. We're at 312-981-7200. You've known my wife, Terry, for a long time, right?
Yes.
Would it be safe to say she's probably the least confrontational person you've ever met in your life?
With you or with other people?
Just in general. With me, with anybody.
She does not get into confrontation.
Ever.
She shuns it.
It's not her way. Would it shock you if I told you that we were in a place on Saturday in a restaurant where she was almost in a fight? A bar fight?
What?
I know. It doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
Here's what happened. We do a thing from time to time. I've told you this. We just get in the car and we just head in a direction and we don't know where we're going. We want to find a restaurant. We want to find some place to eat and we have no destination in mind. We just go, well, let's go west or let's go south or let's go north. We don't go east because we would drown in the lake. So, we
sometimes
did it.
Sometimes do you go far?
Many times we go far.
Like into Wisconsin and
Yeah,
stuff?
That's what happened on Saturday. But that's not the first time that we've driven and ended up in either Indiana or Michigan or Wisconsin.
God, I can't wait till my kids can take care of themselves. And we can just do that.
I have to say, we've done this over the last 3 or 4 years. We've probably done it 15 or 16 times. Really? And more times than not, it's a very pleasant experience. Because we don't know where we're going.
And that's a great feeling.
It really is.
You're like Thelma and Louise.
Without
except
the
one's a guy.
Cliff. Without the thing with the cliff.
All right.
Spoiler alert. On Saturday, we were in just such a mood. Let's just go somewhere. Just get in the car. We don't have any kind of food involved or any food in mind. We don't have a city. We don't have a state. We're just going to drive, and when we see someplace we want to stop, that's where we will eat dinner.
Something that tickles your fancy, then you'll
if
pull over.
If our fancies are tickled, we will know that this is the place to be.
Would you go to Sybaris, too?
No. No. All right.
You're cute when you blush.
So that's the setting. It's Saturday. It's 7 o'clock. Get in the car and drive. So we're driving a little bit. We're heading north, and she says, you know what would be nice? Is someplace outside because the weather Saturday was
wasn't
the most
it gorgeous?
Beautiful, yeah,
kind of cool.
Couldn't be better.
Kind of an uncharacteristic summer day,
right.
But still
for mid-July.
Yeah, but still beautiful to go sit in an outdoor terrace somewhere.
A little bit of a breeze, but right around 70, right? Yeah, perfect. So I say, you know what? We can find that. We'll find an outdoor place. And she said, wouldn't it be nice if it were on the lake where we could see a view of the lake? Well, sadly, just because of the layout of the area here, there's not that many restaurants on the lake.
You're right.
There just isn't. So I say, well, we'll probably have to venture into Wisconsin, which, like I said, we've done in the past. That's not a big deal. Wisconsin's not far.
You got to start bringing home some spotted cow beer for me and cheese curds.
The place we went to had both. They had both. We drive and we drive and we drive, and we end up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And for the purpose of this story, I won't tell you the name of the restaurant.
Normally, the Brat Stop.
I would tell you, it's not the Brat Stop.
normally I would tell you the name of the restaurant, but because of what happened or almost happened, I won't.
Okay, good. This is mean. This means it's exciting. Pull up a chair, people.
So it's Kenosha, Wisconsin, and we're driving through, and they do have a couple of restaurants that are on the water there. They really do. So there was one that she had Googled and she knew a little bit about. So she said, I think this one is the one for us. So we went in, and because at that point it was almost 8:30, it wasn't difficult to get a table. We did. At this particular restaurant on the menu, they have a thing that says Long Island Iced Tea Bar. And then they have about a dozen drinks that aren't Long Island Iced Tea. I don't know why it's called Long Island Iced Tea Bar, because every one of these drinks has nothing really to do with Long Island Iced Teas. They're just alcoholic concoctions.
Well, that, so you make your own drink?
No, you get to pick from any of about a dozen or 14 of them that all have kind of Wisconsin-y names, you know?
Well, shouldn't it be called like the Bevy Bar something?
Yeah.
The Long Island Iced Tea, that's one drink with all the clear liquors in it.
Exactly. So that, all right.
Misleading.
So the plan is flawed, but that's fine because all of them look interesting and they're served in these giant, like 24-ounce giant mugs.
Keepsake mugs?
Yeah, keepsake mugs. They were.
Souvenir mugs.
And everyone there had at least one, and some people had several of them around them. Now, one would probably do you in, but like I said, some of the people there had two or three, or one guy had four, and that's a lot of drinking. So Terry says, oh, these look good. Look at the lady behind you. She's got one that looks interesting, and it's like this bright, glowy yellow, like Mountain Dew, but electrified Mountain Dew. So here's where the problem is. Ready? Terry says to the lady, who I think may have had one too many, that looks like a great drink. And the lady just smiles and doesn't say anything. And she said, what's it called? And the lady goes, it's a Packer Slammer. Makes sense. It's Green Bay territory. So it's a Packer Slammer. So then the lady stands up and walks toward us and says, you guys are Packer fans, right? And the whole place gets quiet.
Oh, my God.
Everything gets quiet. And then Terry starts to explain that, no, we're not. We're not from the area. And I drown it all out. I raise my hands and I'm waving. I go, yes, we were told Aaron Rodgers would be here. We love the Packers. Go Pack. The Pack rule. You know, I'm like throwing it all out.
Terry's too honest.
And then her boyfriend or husband or guy she's drinking with, I don't know, he stands up too. And it gets really quiet in there. And I'm like, this is not how I want to die, because we're not Packer fans.
So with a great drink in my hand.
With a glowy yellow drink. But Terry wants to explain that although we have respect for the Green Bay Packers, we ourselves are not Packer fans, but it wasn't the time or place for that.
Right. I agree. I would have done the same thing Terry did because first of all, I offer way too much information. Terry doesn't like to lie.
She doesn't have an inner to lie. She can't lie.
But
that could be a life-saving lie.
Yes,
that's a difference.
That would have been, at that point, you just kind of go, yeah, and blend in with the woodwork and don't say anything more.
Well, she said, because keep in mind, it's Kenosha. We're technically closer in Kenosha to Chicago than they are to Green Bay.
That's true.
But I then pointed out the fact that there was the Green Bay logo on everything there. Like the taps on the beer all had the name of the beer, and then above it was a Green Bay Packer helmet.
You should have noticed this before.
It was everywhere there.
Was it all of a sudden like you're in a movie, like you're seeing everything Green Bay?
I swear, yes. But then the rest of the meal, people were getting looks from people like, you guys are not Packers fans? And
you stayed?
No, yeah, because the food was great. Everything was fine with the exception of the fact that we may have been killed for not being Green Bay Packer fans. I'd go there again, but I'd wear a Packers jersey. I really would. All right, we need to take a break. That's what we need. We'll take a quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
So I'm a little envious that you and your wife, Terry, get to just go out on a Saturday night and drive till you find some place that you want to go to.
It's the coolest thing. I love doing it. I highly recommend it.
You
should do it. You would enjoy it.
But when you showed up at this place... And really, all Terry did was say, that looks like a good drink. What's it called?
Right.
Are you a Packer fan?
You better be a Packer fan. And it got so quiet as the entire restaurant waited for our answer.
That's awkward.
I'm thinking of like Packers from 1,000 years ago. I'm Bart Starr's friend. I'm John Brockington's next door neighbor.
Jason, are you familiar with the Wisconsin area?
Yeah, I missed actually where Bill was. Where were you, Bill?
He didn't want
I was in Kenosha, but I don't want to say the name of the establishment because I will go back.
Well, I was just going to say I'm born and raised in Wisconsin, and there's certain places where I won't even go.
Because why?
Because you start to hear the banjos, I swear to God. You know, it's like deliverance, and there's something in the water up here. So avoid any waterways, you know, avoid the Rock River, the Fox River.
Really?
River. Yeah, oh yeah, it's definitely, you know, you guys had a morning host on GN, I think it was before you guys got there, and he's from Fond du Lac, and there's definitely...
Oh, Johnny B.
Yeah, there's something in the water up there for sure.
So yeah, and I've heard stories. I've heard Johnny for years talk about that, but that's more in the North Woods and stuff. This is just Kenosha, isn't that right over the border?
It's just it's about 15 minutes over the border.
They should welcome Illinoisans.
They should. I mean, you bring a lot of revenue into the state, but you know it's just this meathead mentality. I think of some of these people. It's weird.
Yeah, the rivalry has always confused me. Back when I did stand-up, I was telling Wendy this a little while ago, when I would work in Wisconsin, and not just me, you could never say that you were from Chicago. It was just the worst thing you could do. They'd be mad at you immediately, so you just pick a city and say you're from that city.
I love Chicago. You know, a lot of Illinois people head up to the North Woods for vacation. I like to head down to Chicago for vacation. You know,
in all honesty, when I used to go to the North Woods, when my wife and I started dating before we were married, there were more Illinois people up in the North Woods than there were Wisconsin people.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Especially, you know, you head up north to Green Bay to Door County. It's every other car's, or most, I'd say three-quarters of the cars are probably from Illinois.
True.
Why all the hate?
Why all the hate?
I know our Bears suck right now, but that'll change.
Right.
I know the Packers are really good. Is it all about football, or do you Wisconsinites not like us?
I don't have a problem with you, but I think it is a lot about football. There's not much going on up here, so that's all a lot of people have.
It's like to Wisconsin, we're like the older brother that gets all the attention. Is that what it's like, kind of?
I think so.
All right. Well, a lot of people are texting, too. Yeah, you need to be careful in certain areas, but I wouldn't have guessed Kenosha was one of them.
No, I know.
The Brat Stop is there, for God's sakes.
Right.
For cry-eye.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you, Jason.
The Bong Recreational Center.
Oh, that's in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Hmm.
The most strangely named of all recreational centers.
Yet we all remember it.
No.
Whether we've been there or not, we remember the sign.
That's true. That's very, very true. And I, you know, in all honesty, I will go back to this place at some point. Because the food was great and everything about it was nice. I just felt a little...
intimidated?
Slightly out of place and intimidated. Yeah.
630 says, Bill, you should have stood up and told the manager that you're taking your Illinois dollars elsewhere.
Yes.
Although he probably would have said, go right ahead, there's the door.
Please.
No. Sorry you were hassled like
no,
that.
No, it's all right. It's all right. But, you know, we learned a valuable lesson, which is, you know, you lie to save your life at some point.
And what did you do when Terry almost got in this fight with the girl?
Well, I didn't know what was going to happen next because the girl stood up and started making her way toward us, and she was at the next table.
With her
fist
up?
But it's when but you could tell she was like, this is a very important answer. So whatever you say, think about it before you answer. And then her boyfriend really got this weird kind of defensive stance to him. He stood up, and I'm like, you're standing up over this? What? And truth be told, I've been so critical of the Bears. I wanted to bring them tapes and play tapes of our show where I'm ripping on Jay Cutler, going, "Hey, before you guys take us out, listen to this," and then just play some tapes of me ripping on Jay Cutler.
There have been several times that poor Jimmy Mack has had to jump in with something. I have a smart mouth every once in a while,
yeah,
and I like to handle it myself for the most point. But some friends of ours took us to a Bears game. And at the end, I don't remember who they were playing. This was quite a while ago. And at the end of the game, they were all huddled around. And I said, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And my friend said, praying. And I laughed because I didn't know that that was true. But this particular team did like a post-game prayer session.
Oh, they really did?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a huddle.
So, see what I mean? And then some woman next to me said, oh, are you not a Christian? And I said, are you kidding me? I didn't think there was a prayer session going on. And then she came after me. So then Jim gets involved with the husband. And I'm like, you cannot help me out unless I ask for help.
Right.
You have to act like you don't know me.
Right.
And just stay out of the fray.
Right. Right.
And this other time at a bar, there was, I don't know where it was. It was on the north side somewhere. We were out meeting a bunch of people from a radio station. We had like a Loop reunion years ago.
Yeah.
And some guy was being kind of a jerk to me. And I stood up for myself, whatever. I don't remember what I said, but I thought I put him in his place. And then as I walked by, he kind of lifted his leg behind him to kick me.
And that's a class move.
That's exactly what I said to him. I said, oh, that's a class move. Why don't you kick a girl?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I didn't do it. Well, at this point, Jim felt the need to get involved because all of a sudden there was, you know, some contact.
Right.
And the guy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And Jim's like, I saw you do it. And just kind of pushed this kid's head into the jukebox. And didn't really hurt him, but just like, hey, buddy, get off. Then all of a sudden, Jim has two employees from the bar, each on one arm, like holding him up, saying you're under arrest. And he's like, under arrest? For what? This guy just kicked my girlfriend.
Jeez.
And so needless to say that we've never gone back.
No,
there.
I bet not.
But he was not arrested because he didn't do anything.
Well, I give him high marks for defending you. I was humming the Green Bay Packers fight song. You know, if my wife was involved in a fracas, I was just like, oh, I'm a Packer fan too. Huge Packer fan.
But at what point does the guy get involved? Because, you know, we don't want your help unless we really...
Well, that's where the escalation gets really fast is once the guys jump
Absolutely.
In.
Yeah. So you were smart to stay
back.
And
we were outnumbered by about 116-2.
You should have just
Which was
said...
the score the last time the Packers played the Bears.
That's what you say. You just go, well, we're from Chicago, but the Bears suck.
I know.
I might join on your team.
Right. Sign me up.
Is this Demetria?
Yeah. Hi. When I'm up in Kenosha, I know a couple of Chicago-friendly places, but if anyone mentions football, I'm like, football? The heck with that? I'm a hockey fan. It's hockey, baby.
See, but that throws them because they don't have a hockey team.
Exactly. That's why it's a safe thing to say.
Ah, good move.
Right, because how can they punch you if they're scratching their head?
Right. Joel, look up hockey. See what it says in the book.
Yeah, and if you want to go to a Chicago safe place,
yes.
You can hit Kaiser's Pizza.
What is it called?
Kaiser's, K-A-I-S-E-R.
Kaiser's Pizza, and that's in Kenosha.
Why would you go to Wisconsin for
pizza?
Yeah,
I guess there's
okay.
that. Well, the cheese is fresh.
But they're Chicago friendly and it's close to the lake.
All right.
Chicago friendly, really? We couldn't be more friendly here in Chicago. Why does there have to be a Chicago friendly place?
Well, because they're not so diehard about being Wisconsinites that they're gonna allow baloney to happen.
I totally get that. And you know what I was thinking? And Demetri, maybe you can help me because you seem to know the area a little bit. As you drive over the border, like where we were, it's still Green Bay Road and Sheridan Road, even though you're in Wisconsin. So we're driving down Sheridan Road to find this restaurant that we ended up eating at. And there's a couple of houses that are literally on the state line. Like part of their house is in Illinois and part of their house is in Wisconsin. And what kind of weird torment is that? Like you're on one side wanting to hate the other, but it's your own house. You can't hate your own house.
Think about this. What kind of taxation do those properties have? Do they have to pay both states?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
That's the bigger conundrum.
Yep.
Then you got it between, you know, a goofy legislature up there and a do-nothing one down here.
You weren't in conundrum. You were in Kenosha.
Kenosha, not conundrum.
Demetria, thank you so much. And, Bill, I have to read you these texts.
All right.
Bill, Wendy, love your show. Live in Kenosha County, and I'm embarrassed about your story. My husband and I are Bears fans, as many of our neighbors are. It's kind of a fun mix of Bears and Packers fan. Not everyone in Wisconsin is a jerk, so sorry for the experience.
Oh, I know that. I definitely know that. I know plenty of Wisconsin people that couldn't be nicer. And most of the people at that restaurant were nice, but this particular couple were ready to throw down over whether or not my wife and I were Packers fans.
Be careful next time.
I'm going to be very careful next time.
Get me some Spotted Cow and cheese curds, because then you'll really look like, well, you really look like a tourist. Never mind.
I know. All right, a quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, the Republican National Convention. I know Roe is out there and
Andrea Darlis is heading over there.
On Wednesday.
Right.
But Roe and Anna are there, I believe, today, starting at 3 o'clock. So I don't know when the party kicks off. But earlier in the show, you had mentioned that Chachi is the top speaker.
Yeah, TV at the Scott RNC. Baio, Chachi, or the guy from Charles in Charge will be not your keynote speaker, but certainly your crowd pleaser.
He is like the biggest on the list right now at the Republican event going on in Cleveland.
You and I have a side bet. Can I reiterate the side bet?
Yeah.
For those of you who remember the work of a young Scott Baio back on Happy Days and then his spinoff show, his spinoff hit, Joni Loves Chachi, he had a catchphrase where he would just say, wah, wah, wah. He would just say that. So you and I have a $10 bet. You say at some point during his speech, Scott Baio will say, wah, wah, wah. I say he leaves it out.
I'm just going to pay you now.
Give me the 10. Give me the 10.
But come on, he's got to do something. He's got
to. No, you don't have to give it
no,
to me.
No, but I'm putting it on the side because I know I'm going to lose this
bet. All right.
Bit.
All right.
Oh, I only have a $100 bill.
I will also accept 100.
Kidding. I've never even seen one. I have a 5 and a 20.
All right.
So I will get change for you.
All right.
But he popped up on the speakers list, Scott Baio.
How does that happen? Like,
because there's no one else.
But even if you're, let's say you are the think tank of the Republicans and you're going through names, when somebody mentions Scott Baio's name, doesn't everybody just laugh and go, yeah, I guess we could. Like, what would happen that everybody would go, yeah, let's get Scott Baio. That's great.
All right, well, you want to know how it happened?
Yeah.
Scott Baio says he was actually at a fundraiser for Mr. Trump the other night with his wife.
Yeah.
And Trump invited me to speak at the convention, which was completely unexpected and out of left field. This Baio told Jeanine Pirro on her show Justice with Judge Jeanine.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what that is either.
Too many judges.
There's a lot of judges.
Not many on the bench, all on TV.
Right.
So he was asked, and he said yes. And
it would be hard to say no. I mean, that is an honor.
Well, and he seems to like him.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just wait till you hear more. You ready?
Yeah.
The Cleveland speakers list also includes Calvin Klein model Antonio Sabato Jr.
He's handsome.
He is beautiful.
Yeah. But again, is he a motivator for a political party?
Sure. He's been on General Hospital and The Bold and the Beautiful.
All right. Then, yeah, I would go with him. Antonio Sabato Jr.
And there's Sabato will be speaking on Monday. Okay. So you got Chachi.
Sabato Jr.
Other non-political figures on the GOP's list include Willie Robertson of the Duck Dynasty World.
Yikes.
Dana White, president and driving force behind the World of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, speaking on Tuesday.
That's more like it.
Listen to this. You go from Clint Eastwood last time to this.
Which, I hate to say it, if people don't remember.
It was memorable.
It was memorable, but I don't think it helped the party at all.
No,
did it?
I don't think so, but it was.
He did the fake chair, chair that was empty with Obama in it.
Yeah, that's right.
That was not good.
But everybody was talking about it, and he's Clint Eastwood.
Right.
You go from Clint to Chachi?
that shows what's happened in 4 years.
I know. Golfer Natalie Gulbis is going to be there. Former astronaut Eileen Collins.
Yeah.
And that's all I have.
It's like Dancing with the Stars. It's not even like the political convention. You just read next year's Dancing with the Stars cast.
You're absolutely right. Hey, Mike. Wah, wah, wah. Hey.
Wah, wah, wah. I hear Jody Cunningham from Happy Days, because her and Chachi used to be an item.
Yes, they were. They loved each other.
She's going there. I've heard she's come on
she's
really
destitute.
Bad times.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll get Danny Bonaducci out there, too, huh?
Why not? Why not?
He'd go. I mean, and really.
Yeah, slam fest.
All right. I'll talk to you, Mike.
Wah, wah, wah.
That should be. We're gonna steal that.
Those should be the bumper stickers for Trump and Pence. Wah wah wah.
No, it should be why why why. Can we take a quick break?
Yeah, but I do want to point out. We will definitely take a break. But I do want to point out, and somebody texted us this earlier when we were talking about the fact that it's Scott Baio, that the Democrats will just have the same kind of lunacy in their non-political speakers, and I know that. And when it's their convention, we'll mention those. They said, and I haven't seen this list published anywhere, but they said Lady Gaga's doing the Democratic convention.
I don't see that.
I don't know where they found that list.
Yeah, I got to look into that. I was looking to try something out. What is today? The 18th?
Yeah.
I know President Bill Clinton will be joined by mothers of victims of police violence for speeches focusing on families, children, and calls for criminal justice reform.
This is at the Democratic Convention,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. The group of mothers include Gwen Carr, mother of Eric Garner, Sabrina Fulton, mother of Trayvon Martin, some other people, and then Joe Biden.
Yeah.
John Edwards, Joe Lieberman. That can't be right.
John Edwards is an interesting choice, isn't it?
Yeah, I gotta look for more.
That's a strange choice if they go John Edwards.
Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama, Chelsea Clinton among Democratic convention speakers. There's no star power there.
It's interesting that both of the candidates have their kids coming up to speak. I guess that's happened in the past too.
And I see where that could work.
Right, because you're extolling the virtues of what they're like as a family man or a family woman. So, all right, I guess.
And their kids
but
are
Trump
great.
Aren't there six Trumps speaking? There's six, right? His daughter, his sons, his wife.
It's a Trump fest.
Who else?
Trumpapalooza.
It's Trumpapalooza. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Chad Lovitz will be there as Satan, says 331. I don't know which
That's
convention,
possible.
But we'll just leave
That's
it open.
That's very possible. All right, a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And about, I don't know when the convention officially kicked off.
Let's I think
see.
Earlier today. Right, didn't it?
Yes, about a half an hour ago, roughly. The Republican National Convention kicked off Monday amid higher security concerns after, of course, the three police officers were fatally shot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on Sunday. New Jersey's delegation heard from Republican National Committee Bill Palatucci at a morning breakfast while Governor Chris Christie spoke before the Michigan delegation in Akron. Delegates on Monday will vote on the party's platform during an afternoon session at the Quicken Loans Arena. And the theme of the day, do you want to know?
Can I guess? Yikes! Is that the theme?
Well, that's what we're saying. But the theme of the day's speaker list is, quote, Make America Safe Again.
Oh, right. That's what I'd go with. So it was Trump's whole platform for months was Make America Great Again. But then they realized safety first. Let's make it
yes.
safe and then we'll make it great.
So the list of headlining speakers, Melania, wife of Donald.
Melania Trump.
Couple of senators, Tom Cotton from Arkansas, Joni Ernst, Iowa.
No, Joni Loves Chachi. So you put Joni Ernst up and then Scott Baio and you got Joni Loves Chachi.
I don't know when he's speaking. But yeah, Joni's coming up first. Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Ryan Zink of, what's MT, Montana?
Yes.
No, it isn't.
I think it is, isn't it?
I don't like the two
It's Montana.
Letters. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani will be speaking.
Interesting.
U.S. Marine Corps veteran John Tegan and Mark Geis present at attacks on the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi in 2012. That's interesting. And Marianne Mendoza, an immigration reform advocate whose son was killed by an illegal immigrant driving drunk.
Oh,
so that's who's
that's
going to be
call.
Speaking. Make America Safe Again.
Now, usually what's happened in the past is they put the lesser-known speakers on early, like around this time of day or a little bit later, and then later on into the primetime hours, that's where you get your more A-list types.
Your Chachi. Your A-list.
Right. Chachi, Willie Ames, if he's around, maybe Bobby Sherman.
Leif
bring
Garrett.
Him in. Leif Garrett, if he wants to do it. So that I would imagine that to be the case, although, as it's been pointed out in several articles over the last couple of weeks, all the Republicans that carry much weight are all passing on this convention. They're not showing
up.
Chris Christie is there.
Sorry. That was a cheap one.
That was a cheap shot. I don't know if you read the same stories I read over the last couple of days, but everybody, and this would fall under the category of duh. He's a little disappointed that he did not get the vice presidential nod.
Really?
He's just a little disappointed. But now they say he may get, like, what were the, there was a couple of other positions that they're dangling in front of him that he still might get. Like, chief of staff isn't bad. It's not vice president, but that's not bad. But there's a couple others that they're all going, well, you know, Chris, you may still get this, but he's slightly disappointed.
Isn't this weird, though? Because you started out with the whole clown car of Republican candidates, potential candidates, and it was whittled down.
Right.
And now these people who weren't favorited are now just placed into other positions. Isn't that
right.
weird?
Yeah, I guess it's to show, I mean, so much of this is to show party unity. So they're trying to find a place for Ben Carson, and they're trying to find a place for Chris Christie. And there are, I mean, there's a lot of places that they could end up, but vice president isn't going to be one of them.
No, and then there's hundreds of naked women at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland as well. 100 women joined forces, and they took all their clothes off.
Yes.
It was a mass undressing organized by...
This is the first time Ted Cruz had seen a naked woman, by the way. And he's married and has kids.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
He tweeted this. Ew. Hashtag ew.
This is the photographer Spencer Tunick, who I've not really heard of.
He's been around forever. This is what he does, is he goes places and takes large groups of people, hundreds of people, and they
just
all take
women?
Their clothes off. No, women and men.
All right. Well, he's been planning this large-scale nude photography project, and it's titled Everything She Says Means Everything. Somebody's got to get with him.
He needs a better name.
Everything She Says Means Everything.
Yeah, that's not a good name.
In May, Tunick called out for volunteers to participate in his vision to interrupt business as usual at the RNC with a flood of nude bodies.
Oh.
Nude is a very fun word to
say.
Nude.
Yeah.
The only requirement, you had to be a woman.
Oh, that's racist.
This project,
but that would
only.
Be my rule too. If I was Sexist. Doing this, I'd go, all right, naked guys, out of here. We're trying to do art. Get out.
Whether Democrat, Republican, or any other political platform, Tunick has inspired Bill Left to start his photography career.
Isn't it ironic? A man whose last name is an article of clothing insists that you not wear any articles of clothing when you show up to his photo shoot.
And a tunic covers a good percentage of
Normally,
your body, so that
right.
is ironic.
Yes.
Tunick hoped the work would serve as an act of peaceful protest, combating the hateful rhetoric Donald Trump and his followers have directed at women through the simple power of collective creation.
That's
the message resonated.
Idea.
Over 1,800 women signed up to participate. He only wanted 100.
Wow.
Each participant submitted a statement explaining their reason for getting involved.
Yeah.
A picture of themselves nude.
Right. Sure.
One wanted a way to remember her body during pregnancy. There is a picture of the pregnant bump. It's a big bump. I hate that word, baby bump. Mm-hmm. Another hoped the experience would help her heal after she was sexually assaulted. Some wanted to accept and celebrate their aging bodies. Others wanted to leave a positive impact on their daughters.
That's
their
interesting.
Their daughters didn't really want to see you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Many hoped to stick it to the RNC. The women came together outside Cleveland's Quicken Loans Arena the day before the convention was scheduled to start. So that was yesterday. And if you look up 100 sheroes.
I have. This isn't the first time.
This is from Huffington Post. There's a picture of, how can that be up on the internet?
It can't be.
They're not, there aren't black bars there.
No. Well, because
you can see all the tan lines.
It's new, because it's news.
Nudes.
I think it fits under the guise of news, so you can't censor it.
How many times have you visited this page?
It's my screensaver. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, as it turns out, many of us normal people.
Speak for yourself. I'm not normal.
Have similar dreams. And
teeth
we do.
Falling out.
Yeah, that's one of them. That's on the list. Harper's Bazaar just put out a bunch of common dreams and what they mean. Isn't that strange? Almost anyone I've ever talked to about dreams has had that dream, and I can never figure out why. Is it that big of a fear of us? I mean, we all know as we get
something.
Older that our teeth will fall out. That's a fact.
No, it isn't.
When you get older, not everybody, but, you know.
I'm going to hang on to my chompers. Or
I
do you say
you
choppers?
Do.
I say chompers.
I vacillate, but I don't want to talk about that on the air. I do want to say this. They have, over at Harper's Bazaar, they have tried to figure out what these dreams mean and why we all have them, like your teeth falling out. That's very high up on their chart here. It says, Wendy, are you an anxious person?
Yes. Answer that question.
Yes. It could be pent-up anxiety coming through in the form of a dream. We might think of this as being concern about one's potency, competence, strength, power, ability to take a bite out of the world. This common dream can also be associated with times of change and transition.
Yeah, because when your teeth fall out, you have to get dentures. And yeah. And enjoy Martha Ray.
But the great Martha Ray. But why, like, of all the things defaulting on us, like, I've never had a dream where I've lost my eyesight or the ability to hear or to walk, or I don't know if you have, but everyone I talk to, it's always the teeth giving way. Isn't that strange?
Well, I clench my jaw when I sleep, so that's probably why I dream about that, too.
Yeah.
Because it's always something. See, you're stressed. And
that's
you
it, isn't it?
Jaw.
It's stress-based. It's got to be stress-based. What about this one? Again, this is an incredibly common dream. Almost everybody's had this, of somebody chasing you.
Always. And you can't scream.
That's a separate one, but also
all
here.
Right. We can save that.
That's also here. And do you get this when you get the dream of somebody or something chasing you? There's always a part where there's stairs that I'm running up, but then the stairs become like an escalator that I'm moving down, or
like
it stops
treadmill.
Being. Yeah.
You can't get anywhere. You can't get away.
Right. Right.
What does that represent?
Where does that come from?
Let me guess. Anxiety?
The answer to everyone, spoiler alert, the answer to every one of these is too much anxiety.
And why aren't I ever chased by someone I want to be caught by?
No, it's
like
always
Keanu
monsters.
Reeves.
No, because that would be too pleasant.
Peanut Tillman.
When he was here, you said to him, could you chase me? And he wouldn't do it.
He said only in your dreams.
Right. He knew that we'd be talking about this. And you said, yeah, in my dreams you do chase me. He wouldn't do it in real life, though.
But it's never anyone who you want to catch you.
Right. It's always bad guys and monsters. It says, it all depends on who is doing the chasing. Often people are being chased by a monster. The monster may be a manifestation of an indiscretion, an addiction, or even a debt.
A giant beer bottle typically chases me.
Is that what's chasing you? A giant bottle of beer?
Let's all go to the lobby. And a hot dog.
Right. Some popcorn.
Catch
some
me.
Good and plenty. If you have the unfortunate dream or nightmare of being chased by someone you know, it could differ. It says, your association about the person chasing you is often more insightful than focusing on the actual person who's chasing you. I don't know what that means. Do you? I don't know what that means. Keep in mind, people in dreams can be substitutions for other people, or even substitutions for aspects of ourselves.
That's true. And I've heard that before, because I had a good dream about you once.
You did? Just
once? I've
known
you a long time. I know. It's only been once.
You should sign up for a more common dream.
But it's because there are qualities of you that I admire.
Right.
That I would like to have for myself.
Sure.
It's not that I think you're hot.
Well, I am.
I
people
know.
Don't realize it, but I am. Now, this is
not
getting
that
back.
You aren't, but
no,
you know.
I get it. Now, this is one you mentioned a little while ago, and here it is. It's the dream that you have lost your voice and you are unable to call for help. Mm. Everyone I know has that.
Mm. You go to scream, and that's all
nothing
that comes
out. Nothing
comes out. Or just like a.
Right.
Yes.
So what would be behind that? Why would we all have that dream?
Someone's choking you in your sleep?
That wouldn't shock me. It says, this may not just be a dream, but it may be the result of something called sleep paralysis. During REM, their early work, not their last couple albums, let's be honest, but around the time of Reckoning.
Pre-Shiny Happy
People. Yeah, prior to Shiny Happy People. During
it's
REM.
REM.
REM
sleep. Rapid eye movement. See, there are various things that we remember from school.
I know. The sleep cycle during which we dream, our bodies experience rematonia. That's the country of people who sleep really hard.
A lot of narcoleptics there.
It's a natural paralysis that you might have during the REM cycle. Psychologically, we are paralyzed during REM to prevent our bodies from acting or moving out while we dream.
That's true. So you don't fall off the bed or punch your bedmate. That's true.
I've told you about, was it a year ago? I bit my wife. I bit her during a dream. That was sort of the story goes.
See what I think of that week I had a dream about you.
Same week?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Oh, he bites.
But I honestly, like, I woke up to her screaming.
I can't believe she didn't, like, hit you in the head.
I would have hit me in the head. I would have.
why would she have allowed that? Because she was asleep, and I'm asleep, and I don't know what was going on in my dream, but I bit her. I bit her in the arm.
Well, she probably thought that was foreplay.
Maybe.
Foreplay to order a pizza.
Right. I'm starving. We got to get some food in here. All right. Let's take a quick break. Oh, no. We can do a little bit more of this.
Right.
I thought it was later.
One?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch
but
more.
But that paralysis has to happen or... I mean, because even in a dream, like when you want to go punch someone, your arm doesn't move.
But sometimes, like she has told me the next day, because I don't remember it at all. She'll go, well, I don't know what you were dreaming about last night, but you were flailing around and your arm was swinging around. It doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, like I'm all over the place.
Those are the nights you dream about Eric Ferguson.
Maybe. I always dream about Eric Ferguson. Oh, another jet ski dream. But I can't explain it because I'm not a violent person. But then in my dreams, sometimes I get nuts and my arms are and I'm biting people.
But that's your subconscious. You hold it together all day where you're really not. But I've seen you get mad enough where you wanted to hit someone.
Yeah,
but don't.
I wouldn't act on it. But
no,
in my dream,
but in your dream, you are.
And I've told you this, like almost always when I have. No. All right. This is a two parter. Part number one. Almost all the times when I dream, I know I'm dreaming.
That's what you say. You're a lucid dreamer.
Yeah. But you don't believe that.
Well, no, I don't. I'm jealous. I wish I could do it because I don't know I'm dreaming.
I don't think most people do.
It's not very common. Some other people do it. I think mostly ambidextrous people.
It's mostly ambidextrous people. But that saves me sometimes because if I'm in a dream that's like particularly scary, I say to myself in the dream, it's a dream. You have nothing to worry about. That thing's not going to attack you. It's a dream.
There's a WikiHow on how to lucid dream.
They tell you how there's a way to convince yourself to do it while you're dreaming?
Yeah, dream lucidity is awareness that you are dreaming. It can range from a faint recognition of the fact to a momentous broadening of perspective. Lucid dreams usually occur while a person is in the middle of a normal dream and then suddenly realizes they are dreaming.
Oh.
Wow. That's because you wanted to be a filmmaker.
I know you're kidding, but I think that's true. I do believe that that's true. Now, if I had to classify my nightmares, almost every time I have a bad dream, it's almost always, not always, but almost always, somebody trying to take something away from me. It's either people trying to break into the house and take things away. It's always something where I have something and somebody's trying to come in and take it away from me.
Well, that's one of your biggest fears. You're a little selfish.
I guess that's probably right.
And seriously, that's you like to right. protect your stuff.
Yeah.
Right. You
that's
do.
True.
And most people do.
It's true. But if I'm like that during the day when I'm awake, why would I waste any time also doing it when I'm asleep? Why wouldn't I spend that time in a better way than just still trying to protect my stuff?
Because you're, again, holding it together. You're not a violent person, but maybe you have violent thoughts.
Yeah.
You don't want to tell people... Those are my mints. Don't touch them.
Right.
You actually, you know, will see somebody eyeballing your mints and you'll go, would you like one? Hoping I say no.
Right.
So then in the dream, you're,
right.
you know, it comes out in full force.
Right.
That makes perfect sense.
It's always way bigger. You mentioned the mints because that's real life or club soda. Like every time I put one
right.
in the refrigerator,
somebody steals it.
But that's just dollar stuff. Like in my dreams, they're taking my house or my family or my car. I shouldn't have said them in that order. That makes it sound really bad. let's go with family
car,
first
no.
and then car.
Car
right,
should be
car first.
First. Then
right.
family, then house.
Right. All right, let's go with that. But why would I waste like if I'm focused on that during the day, it's ridiculous to let it go at night, right?
But you're not letting it go because that's when your subconscious is coming in and going, you know, I saw somebody looking at my car funny. I thought they were going to steal it. It makes
yeah.
perfect sense that it comes out
in the subconscious,
when your guard is down.
Yeah, I guess so.
It makes perfect sense.
All right. More of these are coming up next. These are from Harper's Bazaar. It's the common dreams that we all have and what they mean. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Talking about dreaming, Harper's Bazaar put together some common dreams that people have. Jim laughs in his sleep a lot.
Does he really?
And I say, quit mocking me. I do. I hear him giggle sometimes.
What does he know why when he wakes up? What's
no.
making him laugh?
No,
he doesn't remember.
I'll say, you were laughing last night. And he goes, really? He has no idea.
That's great.
I like to remember my dreams. I know some people can't.
Yeah, it's very hard for some people too. Have you had this dream? Again, these are according to Harper's Bazaar as they go through the most common dreams that we all have and try to explain them to us. It says you are at an elegant dinner party, but you're with a deceased family member or some other impossible scenario. Have you ever experienced that?
No.
You haven't?
I've had like one or two dreams about my mom, and she's been gone 19 years.
What's happening in the dreams?
She'll just be sitting there as I'm doing something. It's not like I'm having this momentous occasion where it's like, oh, I always wanted to ask you something. It's just, she's there. And it's only been once or twice. No.
Doesn't scare you. It seems normal.
It just seems normal. It's not particularly scary or comforting. It's just like, oh, mom was there.
About 2 years after my mom died, I had a dream where the hospital that she died in called me up and they said, we want you to come in. We want to talk to you about something. And I went, okay, I can do that for you. So I came in and they said, we want to take you back to the room that she died in. And I said, I'm not sure where you're going with this, but if you need to, okay, I'll go with you. So they brought me in and they closed the door and then a curtain opened and my mom came out. And the doctors explained that I was the only one in the family they wanted to know about this, but that they were doing some kind of an experiment with my mom, that she didn't actually die, but they weren't ready for my dad to know or my brother to know or anybody else. They just wanted to ease me into it. And I woke up and I was like, I was all
sweaty,
wet.
Yeah.
I was like, not even scared. It was just the weirdest thing.
And can I tell you, you definitely controlled that dream because you are the one that they would have told. They wouldn't have told your dad or brother.
You know what? It's really
strange.
I thought about that. Like, what did that dream mean? What could that have possibly meant? And then I thought exactly that is, I guess of the three of us, I mean, this is an impossible scenario, but I guess that would have made sense. But I was like feeling all kinds of emotion. Like I was mad at them for doing this trick on us. And then I was upset with my mom. Like, why did I have to wait a year and a half or 2 years? Like I was going all through
really,
this.
Really? You the king of pranks?
Yeah, I guess. But this wasn't a prank. This was like they were selling it as they were doing some medical experiment that wasn't quite ready. They wanted to make sure that this was a viable option before they told us. You know, like within the context of the dream, as weird as it was, and it was, like in the context, you go, oh, all right, I guess that kind of makes sense.
You, the kid who watched every Night Gallery and Alfred Hitchcock.
I know.
That's why
you think I might have been influenced by any of that, maybe?
Wow, that's freaky.
Oh, man, you should have, like, honestly, that was a dream that for hours afterwards, like all that day, that's all I could think about.
You're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Barbara has something that happens to her frequently. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Yeah, I'll have these terrible dreams, and it happens to me quite often. Someone's chasing me. I never know who they are, but it's a bad guy. It's always a guy. And I'm flying, and I can just keep out of their reach. Just barely, but I do keep out of their reach. But it is the craziest dream. I don't understand what the flying and them trying to get me and the scaring us. It's so scary.
What do you think it means? Do you have any idea?
No.
No idea.
I don't. I'm a scaredy cat of the dark.
Yeah.
But, and a bad guy, you know, the, well,
okay.
You know.
Your phone is breaking up, but it always seems like, you know, your problems are catching up to you.
Oh, yeah.
It represents something like that. The flying's really cool, but in your dream, when somebody's chasing you, it's like you always arch your back for them not to grab you.
Because you got a couple extra inches where they can't catch you. Right.
We got to have somebody on from that School of Metaphysics. They have that dream hotline that comes up every year.
Right.
And we'll have them on again because there are people that have crazy dreams. Joe, what do you dream about?
Well, nothing in particular. It's just the way that I stop having crazy dreams is I just don't eat the pepperoni at night anymore.
That's what they say. Spicy foods give you bad dreams. I don't know if that's true.
It is. It absolutely is.
Some people, some people insist. Joe's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
You have a pepperoni omelet for breakfast then after you've awakened?
Yeah, and then I have dreams in during my morning nap, too. It's just terrible.
That's not good.
Thank you for calling, Joe.
When I was doing the overnight show, there's an author we had on. We had her on several times. Her name is Adele Nozadar. She's from Australia. And I told her that after September 11th, I had a reoccurring dream, and I used to have it all the time. of being on the beach near where I live in Evanston, and it was my family, my wife and my two daughters, and paratroopers would come onto the beach from some unknown terrorist sect, and they would just, again, it goes back to my thing of things being taken away from me. They would just like put their arms around people and take them away onto boats off the beach where
kidnapping
I live.
Them.
Yeah, they were essentially kidnapping them. And my family members were included in this, but friends and family and stuff, you just saw these guys swoop down, get taken in their arms and put on a boat, and then the boat sails away and you're helpless. And she said that that event, September 11th, altered so many people's dreams. We would all, even people who said, I never have nightmares, all of a sudden, because a nightmare played out in front of your eyes, people started having a lot of nightmares. And I was one of them. I was having nightmares constantly after it.
Terry has one that happens. This happens to me, Terry. What is your dilemma and your dream?
I'm a pro gun guy. I'm a big gun guy. I'm just into guns. I love guns. And in my dreams, because I have these dreams a lot, if I'm in the process of trying to defend my life or defend someone else's life in a dream, the gun never fires.
Is it jammed or empty? Because I wonder if that has something to do with it.
No, it's not empty. Trust me. It's not empty. But it just never fires. It doesn't jam. I point and I pull the trigger. There's no click. It's just nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. And I wind up just waking up and that's the end of the dream. And
that's happened to me too.
Where
really?
Something that's dependable yeah. stops being
yes.
dependable. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I just, I think you're okay, Terry.
Wendy has described you as being okay, Terry. You have nothing to worry about.
So you think I should conceal carry a revolver instead of a semi-automatic? That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that's what that dream means.
I don't know. I don't know that that's what it means, Terry, but thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
All right. Let's take a break.
At the convention.
Let's take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.